all these benefits to the president, he can still spy on us with impunity. This law is a law for dictatorship. Shame on Jim Webb. Shame on your party and the president for promoting it.
Mark, all I can tell you is Jim Webb's been in the Senate now for about 14, 15 months. He got this one right. Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
The fact that Mike is saving you, Senator Webb, should encourage you to change your position, and I hope you do. That's all for the Inside Scoop. If you enjoy the show, we have many other shows on.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! If it's Tuesday, it must be Tullahoma. It is Tuesday. It's about a minute past the hour. Welcome to tonight's edition of Head On. I'm Bob. And on the plate tonight, a lot of stuff. Various and sundry. Some more important than others, I suppose. Depending entirely upon who you are and what you think's important in this little life. So we'll try to hit whatever's on your mind. You know the phone number. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. That's toll-free. If you've got your own long-distance, unlimited dialing plan, you can make it a little easier for us to make it from month to month by dialing 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. Try to respond to just about everything I get. And let's see. Oh, the chat room. By all means, try out the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, chat room, it's free, no membership required, no dress code, no rope line, and you don't have to bribe the bouncer. You just have to behave yourself and talk nice. Type nice, I suppose, would be the better phrase. So, the first thing, kind of hard to ignore, the 50,000-pound elephant in the room. I don't know how much an elephant weighs, to be quite honest. So, I don't know, maybe that's a lightweight elephant. But it's a darn big elephant in the room. We are officially in a realm that we might call inflation land. Inflation at the wholesale level. Oh, this just doesn't bode well. At the wholesale level. You know, the stuff that the prices that people pay before they mark it up and sell it to you. Inflation at the wholesale level took off like a rocket in January. At the fastest pace in 16 years. Oh, let's do some quick math. Let's see, 2008, 8 minus 6, 2000. Oh, in other words, since the last time a stinking, rotten, filthy member of the Bush cabal was in office. Inflation roared up at a higher rate, faster pace than anything since 1992, driven, and this is telling, by rising costs for food, energy, and medicine. Food. Rising costs for food. because we've turned so much of our farmland into McMansionvilles. According to the Labor Department, wholesale prices rose a full percent last month, more than double the 0.4% that economists had been expecting. Practitioners of the dismal science, as our good friend Mark Levine calls it, were expecting a 0.4% price increase. That's what their little crystal balls told them. You know, they rubbed the magic eight ball, and answer cloudy, ask again later. Okay, rub it again. 0.4%. So we are entering a place that none of us want to go. Inflation. That could very well turn into another word, and I would defer to Mark Levine for a proper definition of this word, but it is entirely possible that before George Bush mercifully gets out of the White House, we will be in something that we haven't heard in a while, called stagflation. Stagflation. Stagnant. No, it's not like. No, it's not what happens at a stag film. Showing. Whatever. No, stagnant inflation. Where you get stagnant growth and rising prices together. Yeah, that's fun. That was good for America the last time it happened. And oddly enough, the last time it happened, it was the 70s. And while the article I'm looking at says the economic malady that plagued the country through the 1970s when a series of oil shocks left households battered by the twin problems of stagnant growth and rising prices. It was the entire 1970s, huh? Funny how the right wing only manages to blame Jimmy Carter for that kind of stuff. But Jimmy Carter got it from Gerald Ford, and Gerald Ford got it from Richard Nixon, and Richard Nixon got it from Vietnam. Now there is the thing we don't that this report doesn't dare talk about, and that is the fact that that when you are engaged in a foreign war of choice that sucks up your resources at a rapidly increasing rate, it cannot help but have a negative impact on your national economy. On the other hand, this particular article says food prices have been surging because of increased demand stemming from ethanol production. See, it's some environmentalist fault. They's the one what wanted us not to use oil no more, and we started making the alcohol with it, and now it's all the tree huggers' fault. If it wasn't for that damn ethanol, our food prices wouldn't be rising, but we got to use all the corn and we're using the Le Sueur peas and the French cut green beans and the cauliflower. We're using that for ethanol too now. Danged environmentalists. So it's hard to ignore a story like that on the front end. Like I mentioned maybe a night or two ago, the bread guy at the grocery store said we will see $4 a loaf, you know, and I'm talking about Wonder Bread, you know, it's a wonder you can eat it bread. You know, plain old icky white bread that just turns into glue the minute it hits your, the minute a little drop of saliva, that vile icky stuff, not good bread. I'm talking about, the cheap stuff that's got like pencil shavings in it and so forth. That stuff's going to be $4 a loaf by summer, according to the bread guy. Oil climbed up over $101 a barrel today. It is going to be a... What did my pilot say on the way back from Dulles to Charleston? Going to be a little bit of a bumpy ride! And that's when we started doing those dives and loops and rolls and pitches and yaws and... a little bumpy! When the so-called professional media tells you that we're in for a bumpy ride, look for a soft place to land, because that means things might get a little bit uncomfortable for the Lark's Vomit canapé set. But that means it is going to be road rash time for the middle class and the lower class. So there's that. There is that story to start with. There's a pageant tonight in Cleveland, Ohio. Hello, Cleveland! That the pageant will be between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. MSNBC billing it on its website as Hillary's last stand. Oh, really? MSNBC's programming the election machines now, I guess. I don't know. And just reading along on the story, one has to wonder how this passes for journalism. This is, of course, a piece written by Howard Fineman. The pressure's off Senator Barack Obama in Cleveland this evening. He just has to keep on keeping on. God, I haven't heard that since they were since the keep on truckin' T-shirts of the stagflated 70s, for heaven's sakes. If Clinton can't dramatically convince voter viewers of her essential point that Obama is dangerously vague and ill-prepared for a fall campaign, let alone for the presidency, then it is very hard to see how she can stop the Obama Express in March. And then this paragraph. There is a gathering sense in the media that Obama has gotten something of a free ride. A sense in the media that, well, if Obama's gotten a free ride, the media have given it to him. Right? I mean, whether it's true or not, if there's a free... I didn't give it to him. You didn't give it to him. The guy down at the Shell station didn't give it to him. Who gives free rides or tough rides anymore except the professional media in America? These are the people who are in charge of the daggum rides. These are the carny barkers. These are the three-card Monty dealers. These are the guys who sell the three weirdly weighted darts for a dollar that you throw at the balloons. There's a gathering sense in the media that Obama has gotten something of a free ride. But fair or not, it's still up to the Clinton campaign to show that train's momentum, to slow that train's momentum before it is too late, which it almost is. Howard Fineman apparently gets paid to write this stuff. Which it almost is. That's like the dialogue out of Caddyshack. So at the end there, the llama, he's gonna stiff me. And I said, hey, llama, how about something, you know, for the effort? And he says, there will be no money today, but on your deathbed you will retain perfect consciousness, which is nice. Still up to the Clinton campaign to slow that train's momentum before it is too late, which it almost is. Mama. How can Hillary stop Obama comparing his... Oh, Jesus. So anyway, there's a pageant tonight. It will air on MSNBC and on NBC affiliates all over Ohio. Maybe those of you who are listening from the Buckeye State can chime in and let us know what's going down. Or maybe we'll sneak a listen on MSNBC ourselves. Hard to say. Which it is. I think for the rest of the evening, every other sentence we have to end with which it is. Because that's professional journalism speak. That's how professional journalists write, which it is. This is going to get really annoying really quick, which it is. Somebody will probably tell me to stop pretty soon. Because after all, bad grammar is incredibly annoying, which it is. So we got that going for us. Turns out there's a slippery little McCain connection to the Don Siegelman case that we talked about a little bit last night, a little bit on Friday with Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Last night I told you about how in the Soviet Socialist Republic of Alabama, the Siegelman story was blocked out on WHNT-TV 19, Huntsville, Alabama, They now say, you know, one our CBS receiver just sort of broke down there for 16 minutes. We'll air it some other time. Okay, great. But it turns out that according to the folks over at Mother Jones, John McCain, the McCain-Turian candidate, insane McCain, has a connection to the persecution of Don Siegelman. And by the way, I forget who it was, but one fellow went to a Karl Rove appearance the last night, I guess it was, out in California, and got Rove to hold up a banner that said "Free Don Siegelman." Morons. It turns out that John McCain was head of the Indian Affairs Committee. In 2006, the committee released a report on the Abramoff scandal, the Jack Abramoff scandal, that had no mention whatsoever of an Abramoff email that implicated Siegelman's opponent, Bob Riley, in the influence peddling scandal. That's right, the Alabama governor has his own connections to Jack Abramoff, and probably since Bob Riley is a strychnine-drinking, snake-handling, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking, fundamentalist Southern Baptist, probably Bob Riley's also connected to Christian Coalition wunderkind Ralph Reed. The only wonder there is why he hasn't been indicted yet. No, there was no mention of that email that implicated Bob Riley. And absent that implication, Bob Riley went on after participating in the smear of Don Siegelman, went on to win re-election. Story after story after story presents itself to us tonight. And I'm sure there's stuff that I myself have missed. Let's see. There's a couple of them. Yeah, the from last week. The story about Barack Obama's security detail and the stand down in Dallas. Barack Obama's security detail, as you recall, the Secret Service told police to stop running the metal detector past people in Dallas, Texas, which already sort of has a reputation for knocking off personable Democratic leader types at Reunion Arena. Yeah, Reunion Arena in Dallas. They turned off. They stopped screening. Stopped screening attendees to the Obama event. And this is Texas, where you're required to carry a gun everywhere you go. Little newborn babies get little handguns right there in the crib, little tiny bullets, so they can start learning to shoot early because it's Texas. And they're free, and their guns make them free. The guns do. Well, so they, you know what happened. And then, it turns out that after getting busted, the Secret Service came out and said, there were no security lapses at that venue. This according to Eric Zarin. Who's Zarin? Sounds like a science fiction character or something out of The Lord of the Rings. A spokesman for the Secret Service in Washington. There were no security lapses at that venue. There was no deviation from the comprehensive and layered security plan implemented in very close cooperation with our law enforcement partners. In other words, Eric Zarin, Secret Service spokesman, who wasn't at Reunion Arena, just called a handful of Dallas's finest who were horrified, I tell you, horrified at the fact that they were told by the Secret Service to stand down so that anybody with a gun who wanted to get a nice clear shot at Senator Obama could get on into the arena and maybe, you know, get a nice little bench rest maybe. See, you know, you accuracy goes up a lot higher if you can steady your hand there with the firearm. So maybe a railing seat where you can, you know what I mean. Zarin rebutted suggestions by several Dallas police officers at the rally who thought the Secret Service ordered a halt to the time-consuming weapons check because long lines were moving slowly. Eric Zarin said, "It was never a part of the plan at this particular venue to have each and every person in the crowd pass through the magnetometer." In a way, that's worse. Why isn't it part of the comprehensive plan to have everybody in an absolutely gun-crazy state pass through a magnetometer? One would think that that would just be prudent. For God's sakes, it's Texas. I mean, this is the state where the Vice President of the United States got away with shooting a buddy in the face. You just gotta wonder. But no. It wasn't part of the plan. Now, granted, if George W. Bush goes somewhere, well, hell, they'll charge a guy with a felony for wearing a T-shirt that shows him, you know, with monkey ears. Or a monkey face. Or just a picture of George W. Bush, seeing how he has the monkey ears and the monkey face. They'll take you to jail for wearing a T-shirt that says, "Bring our troops home." Yeah, really. And I'm not talking about political appearances. I'm talking about state appearances, you know, where it's, you know, all Americans celebrating the 4th of July. I happen to know a little bit about this because it happened in Charleston, West Virginia. It was not a political appearance on July the 4th, 2004, when he showed up at the state capitol grounds in Charleston. It was a state appearance. But if you were wearing anything or said anything that appeared to be contrary to the gospel according to George, you didn't get in. And if you got in and then you did something cute like taking off your shirt that's over your T-shirt that says, "Bring our troops home now," well, you got dragged out and charged with a crime. It happened. And yes, everybody going in got magnetometerized. There were magnetometers at every carry event that I went to in 2004. Yes, Lord, yes, but not for Obama, the magnetometers were busy that day. We had to have them for an appearance down at SMU for the Bush Library. Yeah, that's the ticket, yeah. NBC picked up the story a little bit and basically just repeated the allegations from the Secret Service that nothing to see here. Meanwhile, however, just to make it a little more interesting, John Aravosis over at AmericaBlog.com has correspondence from a number of people who have been to Obama rallies, and this paints a picture that's even more disturbing. Seattle. There was no security check in Seattle. These are people who are writing to John Aravosis at AmericaBlog.com. Seattle. There was no security check in Seattle as well. I remember being somewhat nervous about that at the time and mentioning it to my friend. I thought at the time that it would be hard to check 18,000 people in a timely fashion, but geez, they do it all the time for basketball and baseball games, and I think Obama's a heck of a lot more important figure than Ichiro. New Jersey. I went to an event in Newark, New Jersey in January, and the same thing happened. Everyone in line was commenting on the lack of security as well. Alabama. This has been going on for a while. Early this month, my family went to see him speak in Birmingham, Obama. In Birmingham, Alabama, the line to get in was three or four people wide and circled an entire city block. It was moving very slowly at first, with people stationed every 100 feet or so telling you no bags were allowed of any type, have all cameras and anything else metallic in your hands before going through security. As we got closer to the 2 o'clock start time, the pace picked up. When we got to the doors of Bartow Arena, there was no security evident. We walked through, turned off metal detectors, and it seemed at least 50% of all women had bags. We thought it was strange at the time, and Other people were talking about it before Obama came out and started speaking. I have quite a few pictures of the event, and it's obvious that it was possible to get very close to the senator. Again from Alabama. This happened in Birmingham, Alabama also. It appears to be mostly because of time constraints. We waited in line for quite a long time, and they stopped searching by the time I got up to the front of the line. There was only a half hour to go, and the auditorium was less than half full because of the slowness of the searching. San Francisco, California. They did the same thing when I went to see him in San Francisco a few months ago. The lines were miles long, and it was just taking too long to run everyone through the two metal detectors they'd set up. Vegas. I went to one of the early debates here in Vegas, and there was a full slate of candidates. I found it bizarre that there was basically no security at all. I suppose it's possible that there are metal detectors at the entrance to the Thomas and Mack Center. I didn't see them. Nobody checked our IDs against our tickets, and when my friend's name did not appear on the list, they let him in anyway. And he's covered with scary tattoos. Heh. Still, it was disturbingly easy to get in. St. Louis. My son went to an Obama rally at our football stadium in St. Louis. He said there were no metal detectors or searches. I was really surprised. They search our purses when we go to football games. Again from St. Louis. I went to the St. Louis rally, and there were reportedly 20,000 people there. I'm not sure if it was that many, but close. Anyway, we were in a long line, but it was moving quickly because they were just letting people walk right in. Some of our friends that got there early said they were checked, but I guess they gave up because we were surprised to walk right in the door and onto the floor of the stadium. Even at the Rams games, they pat down everybody and check women's purses. Boston. The same thing happened at the Obama campaign event in Boston last April, and it was just after he'd been assigned Secret Service protection. He appeared at the new Aganis Arena at Boston University, and we went. There were no metal detectors, only a prohibition against bags. There were so many students and lots of book bags anyway. So who's lying? Are all of those people lying? Or is the Secret Service lying? Or is the Secret Service laying down on the job on orders from the Bush administration in the hope that maybe some sort of a James Earl Ray will rise out of the out from behind the baseboards and do for the Republican Party what James Earl Ray did in the late 1960s? Just asking. Just asking. Because, you see, I would like to think that the Obama campaign has already figured it out, because they're smart people. But it is going to get ugly, ugly, ugly. If you go to the blog at headonradionetwork.com, you'll find an entry there posted by our good friend Sue under the heading "Seriously, take a look at this picture." And what "Seriously, take a look at this picture" is all about is a photo from Lucy Ann Goldberg's website. And this, the web, and of course you know who Lucy Ann Goldberg is, you filthy right winger. Hateful. Racist. And I realize there's a little bit of probably, well, I'm talking about video again on the radio. Somebody's going to call me on this one of these days. But if you go to the network website and look at, seriously, take a look at this picture is the name of the post. The photo appears with the caption, this is at Lucy Ann Goldberg's website. LucyAnn.com. Don't go there. Just look at the picture on our website. No need to give them the traffic. They're getting enough money out of people as it is. The photo appears with the caption, and I quote, 2009 inaugural as imagined by unnamed Clinton staffers. Suffice to say, It's a real funny picture of African natives carrying spears with all kinds of weird clothes on, and they are black, 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 black. Any doubt that this is a racist nation? Any doubt that this nation has enough racists in it to make racism a viable issue in this campaign? And of course, the real charm out of this is hanging that on Hillary Clinton. Yeah, I'm guessing there aren't just a lot of Clinton staffers that hang out at Lucianne.com. I'm guessing there might actually be open enmity between Lucianne Goldberg and Hillary Clinton, considering Lucianne Goldberg's involvement in the torment and torture and trashing and thrashing and haunting and harassing and hounding of her husband during his presidency, as imagined by a Clinton staffer, though. Which, of course, doubles back on the whole idea that it was a Clinton staffer who was responsible for the picture of Barack Obama in the tribal robes in eastern Kenya, Somali-style tribal robes. Which it wasn't, by the way. Turns out, if you read very closely the Drudge Report article and then, like, take your medicine, you'll find that even Drudge himself doesn't say it was provided to him by a Clinton staffer. Just a bunch of made-up crap, made-up garbage. The typical, ordinary, everyday, run-of-the-mill racism of the Repig-Lickin' Party passed off in a sort of political dirty trick as being the work of the Clintons. Jiminy Christmas, I despise those people. Not the Clintons. The Repiglicans. Remember, the enemy? Hillary Clinton is not the enemy. Barack Obama is not the enemy. The Repiglicans are the enemy. And, you know, the more I think about the McCain story, the McCain story from the New York Times last week, the more I think about that damn thing, it begins to look a little bit more and more like a cook job. What was one of the leading queries, questions, comments about John McCain as it became obvious that he would be his worn-out, idea-free, inspirationless party's nominee for 2008? What was one of the... Yeah, but he's ancient! Isn't that one of the things that was out there? Yeah, it was. So, without actually saying that John McCain was out there making the beast with two backs with Vicky Eisman, they alluded to it and sort of insinuated it. And their insinuations were sufficient to give John McCain a reason to come out and bluster that he did not have sex with that woman, yada, 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 yada. But what was the ultimate effect of it? Why, he must be a man's man to be boinking that. Why, she was 30 years junior to him when he was... So suddenly, he's not so ancient anymore, is he? The New York Times gave John McCain a dose of political Viagra. Wonder how many of us noticed that. I wonder how many of us saw that. Saw it coming. But that isn't that at least part of what it was? Making John McCain look like he's not too old and doddery and dirty and enfeebled to be president? Sure seems to have had that salutary effect, doesn't it? Sure does. Sure does. Oh, by the way, I'm just all over the board tonight, so you'll have to forgive me. By the way, you remember the surge? The surge that was going to be temporary surge? Just long enough to get stuff straightened out over there, and then we'll draw the troops back down to pre-surge levels. Remember that? Pre-surge levels? I think that phrase was actually used. Pre-surge levels. Well, not so much. It has now been determined and announced that after the surge is drawn back down, and I don't understand, this is miracle math made easy. This is that right-wing fundamentalist religion math where 2 and 2 equals a holy trinity of 5 or something. We're going to draw the troops back down who were sent over for the surge, right? So that would mean that we would have the same number of people in Iraq after the drawdown as we did before, right? Right? No, wrong. According to Reuters, the United States expects to have 140,000 troops in Iraq in July after withdrawing 5 combat brigades, leaving a force larger than before it began pouring in troops last year, according to the Pentagon yesterday. Or what's that other, the five-sided loony bin, the Pentagon? Well, these force posture levels are truly conditions based and driven by the mission requirements and the assessments of commanders on the ground. So before the surge, there were 132,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. And he surged about 30,000 more into Iraq. So that's 162,000. And he's going to unsurge it this summer, supposedly, which would mean that there'd be, but there aren't, there's going to be 140,000 troops there. So the troops aren't being drawn down from the occupation. The troops are being driven up in the occupation. And that should give you some small idea, at least, of where the occupation stands as we go through this election year. Of course, no Democratic presidential candidate, be it Senator Clinton or Senator Obama, will be allowed to make a comment about this, because then they will have to answer questions from the so-called professional media as to why they hate the troops. Yeah, it just beats the dickens out of me. How you can want the troops to come home and live to see tomorrow and hug their little children and go back to their regular jobs and all of that stuff, and that means you hate them. I don't think there's enough drugs out there. There's not enough drugs out there to make me that crazy. So much for drawing. The surge is going to be a temporary surge. No. And by the way, those numbers don't take into account the mercenaries, the Blackwaters, the CACIs, the snaky people, the guys who run around shooting civilians for the hell of it. No, it doesn't take those people into account. So actually, by the time the surge is over, there will probably be something more like 200,000 gun-toters in Iraq, if not more. That's some unsurge. That's some mathematics. I wish I could do that kind of mathematics with my bank account. Go out and spend money and wind up having more money than what I spent in the first place. Whew. Yeah, I'd like that. So that look, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that would appear to be a fairly decent starting place for this evening. God knows that's got to be enough to get us started talking. It's got to be enough, you would think, to inspire you to bring something to the table. Does it? We'll find out, I guess. So we'll take a little break and come back after a little tune. And we'll see what you've got, what you're thinking about. Sound fair? All right. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be right back. I'm Bob. Nice little respite there. Who needs a good reason to play a little Bob Marley, huh? By the way, Justin, there are so many of these things that welcome back, that tie together. So I told you the story about the photo at lucianne.com, which you can see by going to the website at headonradionetwork.com and not have to give traffic to those filthy racist pigs at LucyAnn.com. You can do that. Jesus. Well, okay, here's what I'm getting at. In addition to that photograph, that typical right-wing betraying our racist roots photograph, in addition to that, why down in Florida, you're all going to be, all you Florida folks are going to be so tickled with this. Florida has a state legislator by the name of Representative Donald Brown. He's a rip-pig-licking. And you know how it is with vanity plates? Like, you know, say you can get a plate if you're a graduate of the University of Florida or a fan of the University of Florida. There's a Florida State plate. There's probably a University of Miami plate. There's probably a Preserve the Everglades plate. All kinds of different plates you can use. And the funds from them go to the specific organizations for which they're designed. Well, there's a plan in Florida to have a new specialty plate, thanks to Representative Donald Brown. Last week, he proposed a new Confederate Heritage license plate. That's right, a Confederate, it says Florida, big letters, let's call it Florida, and across the bottom, Confederate Heritage. And a big old Confederate battle flag and a stars and bars right smack dab in the middle. Looks like something right off of a white supremacy website. Honest to God, it does. He wants to offer motorists the chance to pay $25 to buy the Florida Confederate Heritage plate, with the proceeds benefiting, quote, educational programs run by Sons of Confederate Veterans. Pardon me. Maybe I don't have the proper temporal perspective here. But I don't think there are any living Sons of Confederate Veterans left. Not even one. There aren't too many Sons of World War I veterans left, to tell you the truth. But the Sons of Confederate Veterans will get the $25 fee, and they will use it to further their educational goals, one of which is to rebrand the Civil War as, and I quote, the Second American Revolution. The one that the South fought so that they could keep owning other people. Charming, isn't it? In a way, I guess it's good that Representative Brown introduces this kind of crap. Because once and for all, we can look at the Repiglican Party and say, it's what we thought all along. Just like Sinn Féin was the political arm of the IRA, the Repiglican Party is the political arm of the KKK. Can you believe this? A week or so after Bill O'Reilly suggests that he's interested in murdering by lynching, mind you, Michelle Obama, within that same week, Representative Donald Brown, upstanding son of the Confederacy in the great state of Florida, introduces a proposal for a Confederate heritage plate in that poor, poor state. Not even Mississippi would have the nerve to... Well, they will now. Dear me. So it's pictures of scary-looking African tribesmen over at LucyAnn.com, and down in Florida, it's a Confederate heritage plate. You could just about cry, couldn't you? Well, I could at least. Dear Jesus. I guess we can be grateful for the fact that the shield there described... how's it described? A shield displaying the rebel battle flag symbol surrounded by the several flags from the Civil War era. None of which, curiously, are the American flag, mind you. We can just be grateful that the thing isn't decorated with a noose or two. Lord God, Billy Bob, where do I live? What's become of my country? Is that all the Repig-Lickin' Party has left now? Casting a backward glance to the good old days down on the plantation. It is simply astonishing. What kind of... So, you know, look, I mean, that's what I keep saying, you know, just sort of, you know, haul your... Okay, sort of sexist masculine reference here. You ladies, please forgive me. Haul your jock straps up around your shoulder blades and get ready for a daggum fight. Because the Repig-Lickins are bringing it. And they're not going to let up. And this is going to go on and on and on and on. All the way to November. I had that excerpt of an email last night that I think I read. Yeah, I read it during the horn section. Where the writer said he predicts voter numification come November. Where voters are just so fed up with the filth and the slop and the grime and the dirt and that they just say, screw it, I'm staying home. I'm absolutely terrified that there might be some truth in that. That rather than deal with this vile, nasty... This is a Republican Party that sanctions an organization called Citizens United Not Timid, featuring the first letters of each word to describe Hillary Clinton. That's the Repig-Lickin' Party. That is where the party of Lincoln is in the year, oh my God, 2008. And that is the filth to which this nation will be subjected for another 9 long months. March, April, May, June, July, August. Yeah, okay, call it 8. And all we've got is each other. All we have is our willingness to band together and stand together and not let ourselves become wearied. And take the knowledge of how vile and how evil, how unmitigatedly evil these people are, and take it out and spread the word around. Let ordinary people know just what the Repig-Lickin' philosophy is. It's nooses, it's Confederate flags, it's pictures of scary African tribal folk who, if you were to bother to study those scary African tribal folk, you would probably find have a greater, better developed sense of hospitality and human dignity and what it means to treat a guest or a stranger than anything that we have in America today. Because in that corner of the globe, to send a stranger away hungry is to send a stranger away to his or her death. We've sort of forgotten that here, haven't we? going to be hard to stomach. All in the world that we can do is use our strength together to keep us going. Weird little story here that just doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. Yesterday, Monday, Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney and his pornographer wife, Lynn, you remember sisters, right? Zoomed off to Dallas for undisclosed reasons. They landed at Love Field about 11:15 a.m. They smiled and waved as they exited Air Force One. No, he travels on Air Force Two. Huh? And were then zipped away from the tarmac in a limousine, and that was the end of that. No other details. Dallas, huh? Dallas, where the Secret Service stood down protection for Barack Obama. That Dallas. Nah, I couldn't possibly... No. No. Couldn't. Just couldn't. I mean, really. That's just reaching. That's just too much. I mean, Dick Cheney wouldn't show up to... No. Not possible. Just couldn't happen. So, we'll take a little break. We'll come back for the second hour. Your thoughts, your phone calls, whatever you want to do. Or the rest of the stuff that's in the stack. And believe me, there's still a ton in the stack. It's entirely up to you. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. This, of course, is The Horn.
goes off, you just close your eyes. Going out west where the cowboys roam, I gotta be part of what's going on, yeah, yeah. Going out west where the cowboys roam, I gotta be part of what's going on, yeah, yeah.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. At least 48 million Americans lack high enough incomes to realize the American dream of solid middle-class lives. That's according to a new report from the Center for Economic and Policy Research. The report says 1 in 5 U.S. workers earn wages below a minimum middle-class standard. To get into the middle class, you have to have a good job, defined by the Center for Economic and Policy Research as jobs paying at least $17 an hour, with employer-sponsored health benefits and employer-sponsored retirement plans. Just under one-fourth of all U.S. jobs meet this definition of good jobs. The report calls for a new social contract in America to lift workers into the middle class. It includes reforming and enforcing wage and hour standards and making sure workers can exercise their collective bargaining union rights. The report also calls for developing new labor standards that include guaranteed paid sick days, paid vacation, and paid family and medical leave in the U.S., as well as true universal health care. Merger talks are all the rage in the airline industry, but where do the unions representing workers come down? Jesse Russell takes a look.
While pilots spent Thursday and Friday of last week trying to work out differences over a merger between Northwest and Delta Airlines, the International Association of Machinists, representing Northwest baggage handlers, said it would oppose the two players coming together. In a statement, the IAM said airline mergers traditionally hurt passengers and workers alike. The pilots at both airlines are represented by the Airline Pilots Association, but the sticking point on their end is how the seniority list at the two airlines will be combined. The union wants to make sure that the merger agreement benefits all pilots involved. Meanwhile, many of United's mechanics are represented by the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. Joe Prisco, president of AMFA Local 9, told the San Mateo County Times that if the airlines try something bad for the employees, the unions will take the fight to the streets. Local 9 represents workers at a maintenance base in San Francisco, which the airline has said could be closed or reduced if there is a merger.
Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Existing home sales fell to their lowest level in January since tracking began in 1999. That led to a drop in home prices for the sixth time in 7 months. The number of homes on the market at the end of January was 4.2 million, up more than 5% since the month before. The median sale price of a home fell by 4.6% in January, in comparison to the same time in 2007.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Here we go. I'm going to get something off my chest real quick. For years and years and years, I've been a fairly devoted listener to public radio. You know, public terrestrial radio. Especially back in the days when I had some sort of a commute in the morning. I'd listen to Morning Edition, and I'd listen to All Things Considered on the way home, because it was about the only real radio news that was going on the terrestrial band anymore. And it's pretty much still that way. Public radio is about the only place that you can get any news. I remember remember having a conversation with the general manager at the terrestrial radio station where last I worked, and God, he hated public radio. He was, of course, a diehard, just, you know, crazier than a sprayed roach, right-wing conservative fundamentalist gas bag. And he'd say things like, well, Bob, why should I have to subsidize it? I said, what, you hate him and you're contributing on the pledge drives? Well, no, then shut up! Well, why can't they compete? And I said, why don't you compete with them? Why don't you put up some decent news? Why don't you have more than a 3-minute top-of-the-hour corporatized newscast once in a while? Why don't you run the long-form news that, CBS makes available? Well, it's liberal bias. Shut up. And so the point of that is to say that I have from time to time defended public radio as having some value. So I was wandering by over at Think Progress earlier today, thinkprogress.org, and I saw a headline, Beck, Rick Santorum is a Winston Churchill. Well, you can just about imagine that I shot coffee through my nose. Yeah, Rick Man-on-Dog Sex Santorum is another Winston Churchill. Sure, you betcha. Whatever gets you through the night, you know? And it turns out that the statement was made in the course of an interview, a radio interview. I want you to hear this, okay? This is a radio interview with Glenn Beck.
Well, when you talk to people on the show, anything you may do, have you come across someone that you would regard as a rising star that you might put more hope in than many conservatives seem to have put in their presidential candidates this time around?
You know, there's only really one guy that I've talked to that I really, really like. I think the guy is a Winston Churchill in many ways, and he blew his Senate campaign because he spoke the truth. And his advisors kept saying, don't say this, it's going to hurt you. And that's Rick Santorum out of Pennsylvania. I think this guy really has it. I think he really understands the world we live in right now.
Now, never mind the fact that Glenn Beck has apparently been, you know, huffing Duco cement or something. Rick Santorum really understands the world we live in right now? This is a guy who said that when the Texas sodomy law was struck down, that it would lead to people having sex with animals. Really. This is a guy who said that Democrats... Well, this is the quote regarding not letting right-wing freaks onto the bench. This is back when the Republicans hollered for, all we want is an up or down vote. And Rick Santorum said, some are suggesting we're trying to change the law. We're trying to break the rules. Remarkable, remarkable hubris. I mean, imagine the rule has been in place for 214 years that this is the way we confirm judges, broken by the other side 2 years ago, and the audacity of some members to stand up and say, how dare you break this rule? It's the equivalent of Adolf Hitler in 1942. I'm in Paris now. How dare you invade me? How dare you bomb my city? It's mine. Yeah, that Rick Santorum. But never mind. Okay, so, yeah, that's what Glenn Beck, well, I won't say thinks, believes, because Glenn Beck doesn't do a lot of thinking with the thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass in right-wing circles for brains. Yeah, so what? Well, I started out this little remark... referencing the fact that I have from time to time over the years been a relatively devoted listener to National Public Radio. This interview took place on National Public Radio. It was an interview with a guy named Steve Inskeep, who is at NPR. It took place, yea, verily, this morning on National Public Radio, what some people now call National Petroleum Radio. And I have to ask the very simple question. What in God's name is Glenn Beck doing on NPR? I mean, the NPR that brings you... NPR! The one place that I used to be able to turn to and think that I was going to get a semblance of fairly delivered news without a bunch of corporate damn slant. And now they're bringing Glenn Beck on to comment on who he thinks is the most Churchillian Republican? Oh, mother! Can I just forget about NPR now? Not NBC, not CBS, not ABC Radio News. NPR. These were supposed to be the serious people. And now I'm not even safe from the likes of Glenn Beck. You know, the guy with the fissure in his butt that nearly killed him. The alcoholic and drug addict. That Glenn Beck. I'm not even safe from him on NPR. He's ruined headline news. Well, along with the stupid Nancy Grace, you know. He's been made a millionaire by the radio, terrestrial radio conglomerates. He called John Edwards' wife a prostitute on the air. And now he's on NPR. I'm going to have to get one of those shortwave sets that you wind up so you can hear the news from some corner of the globe where Glenn Beck ain't. God almighty. National Public Radio. You know, if I was a National Public Radio donor, which I have been in the past, they'd get a letter about now saying, no more, never again, ain't going to send you the $25 for the coffee mug or the box of chocolates anymore, because you're done. It's over. When you feel compelled to manifest your balanced approach by bringing on the likes of Glenn Beck, turn out the lights and go the hell home, because there's nothing left to preserve there. There's nothing there that's left of anything resembling journalism. Steve Inskeep, my God! I'm Steve Inskeep. I'm a serious journalist. And today I'm interviewing Glenn Beck! Whew! We'll go to the phones, see what's shaking. Hi, who have I got?
How's it going, Bob?
Hey, Gene, what's up?
Well, when you turned on Steve Inskeep, I thought, oh, this is the conservative show I listen to on the weekends. Because every time he's on there, it's like it changes somehow. NPR is like, it's normal, and then it kind of just slides over into Republican thought control land. I mean, this last Sunday, here's, what is her name on Sunday mornings? Leanne Hansen, and she's like, she kind of goes like, she automatically says, how do the, she's talking to somebody that's representing the Republicans, mind you, in the campaign. And of course there's a Republican on one side. And then they've got this pollster on another. And it's not really, they don't say whether or not it's a Democrat, but this is supposed to be the opposition guy. But she's talking to the Republican and she says, now, how does the liberal media bias, like it's a given thing? It's, you know, it's already out there. It's like, I just felt like, okay, that's enough. I'm going to just hang up now or turn off the clock radio, because they've gotten so terrible on all this right-wing crap. It's just, it drives me nuts. It's like, this is, and this, the fluff pieces they do anymore, like all the things, we had some Oscar films, Fruit of the Oscar movies, and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like they do maybe 20 minutes of actual news anymore, and then it's all fluff after that on the weekends. So I don't listen to NPR during the week, but I'm kind of reduced to that on the weekends when there's nothing new on the liberal side of the radio spectrum.
Right.
So the minute I heard Stephen King, it's like, oh my God, you're just terrible.
Let's assume for a moment, Gene, that there are principled so-called conservatives out there that they could talk to. Okay. Glenn Beck isn't on that list. Glenn Beck is the public radio interviewing Glenn Beck on public radio is the public radio equivalent of Fonzie jumping the shark. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's where you just pack it in and go home. Well, you know, this experiment ended poorly.
Well, I was trying to look it up while I was on hold for you, but apparently they're going to cut the funding again for it.
And they'll keep funding it until defunding it, the Bush administration will. It will continue to be defunded until it is ripe for purchase by, you know, a Clear Channel or some other, you know, I don't know, maybe Oak Hill Partners Limited by the Bass family out of Texas, the ones that black screened Don Siegelman on TV in Alabama. Maybe they'd like to buy National Public Radio.
Oh, I'm sure. It's gotten so bad, it's not even funny.
Well, but there is a serious inquiry in here, because wasn't it a year or so ago that we caught the Bush administration trying to dummy up the editorial content of public broadcasting by packing the board or whatever with its little hand-picked right-wing freakazoids?
Oh, don't you, sorry to mention the competition, but there's a whole thing on AAR about let's try and fund public radio so they don't have to do all this and that kind of thing, and apparently it didn't really help, because I've noticed their quality is just going down, 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 and it's just terrible. I'm just about giving up on them.
Who, AAR or public radio?
No, public radio. I gave up on AAR a long time ago.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be the second part of the sentence, Gene.
Sure. So... But I know what you mean, because it's like, I'll be listening.
I mean, so what? I mean, do we tune in next week and Steve Inskeep is interviewing, what, Ann Coulter?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Laura Ingraham? What about Melanie Morgan from San Francisco, the one that says she wants to put a bullseye on Nancy Pelosi? That'd be nice public radio fare. You know, that's the thing. NPR used to be this little oasis you could go to and get away from the Flemballs and the Hannitys and so forth and still get some viable information.
Well, think about this, though. Basically, regular terrestrial conservative radio is dying. So basically, they still want to get that message out there. So the conservative message is so bad that not even business is beginning to wanting to pick it up as much as they used to. And so basically, as those avenues close down, where they got to go? So, yeah, they'll move it to NPR.
to paraphrase a movie title, it's No Country for Old Radio.
Basically, yeah. So, anyway, I had to chime in because, yeah, I hate Stephen Skeep. Whenever he's on, it's like, oh, boy, what are we going to hear? What lie are we going to hear now?
Yeah, it just makes you want to eat cat food and run rabbits, I know. Thanks, Gene.
Sure.
Bye now.
Bye.
I knew that would resonate with somebody. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, this is Albert.
Hey, Albert, how are you?
I'm cold. But, yeah, no, I certainly echo the sentiments about NPR. When all the big main issues are going on, NPR is, you know, you can count on them to talk about what is the best pie, and how does your cat cough up hairballs, and just the most inane babble I've ever heard on top of the Republican. Well, you got to remember, Bush put the Republican, what's his name, in charge of NPR, So that's another reason.
Yeah, I can't remember the apparatchik's name, but I remember being horrified by it and think, you know, this is not going to end well.
No, not at all. And then, you know, of course, they, you know, they don't give any funding to it, so... You know, then they rely on the all the Rockefeller foundations and all the other foundations. And, you know, we're going to get into conspiracy theory over here, but, you know, that's the kinds of things that, you know.
Brought to you by the Bilderbergers.
The Bilderbergers. These people, they talk, they keep the people that do listen to NPR. See, I happen to, you know, I try not to listen to the radio very much just because, you know, it's the same stuff all the time. So if I do listen to the radio, it's usually NPR, and at least there's news on, and because I'm usually up at night, is at least the BBC is on at night. But you know, at the same time, it's, you know, there's nothing but driveling garbage on there anyway. So, but yeah, no, NPR is sad. It makes me, it's gone down so far in the last 5 years. I don't even listen to it anymore. I used to listen to it. But,
kind of makes you wonder what Voice of America sounds like over in you know, the rest of the world.
Yeah, pretty well.
You know what I mean?
Do they have Rush Limbaugh on?
No, that's Armed Forces Radio.
Yeah, so, well, the rest of the world gets that too. So, you know, that's one of those. That's one of those helping hands out there. But one of the things I just kind of wanted to bring up, and I guess nobody's even heard about it, but the story's come and gone. Remember a couple months, about a month and a half back, that this guy came on YouTube talking about Barack Obama and how he had oral relations with him.
Oh, yeah. Right.
That guy's name is Larry Sinclair.
Right.
Yeah. Now, what happened was...
I've seen Larry's video, and I'm thinking... This doesn't look like a guy who's never been anywhere near a limo unless maybe he was waxing it.
I kind of thought the same deal. But just real quick, just to kind of give you an updated story, WhiteHouse.com, which is not, you know, it used to be a porno site, I think. But anyhow, so on and so forth. Now they're like a political blog. And what they did was they were going to give this guy $10,000 to take a lie detector test. And if he passed it, they'd give him $100. Well, needless to say, he took his lie detector test and he failed it. Negative 15 score on his questions of oral activities with Barack Obama. Of course, that's a rigged thing and everything else like that. So, but basically what you're looking at is just, and you know, the only people that I can see that have embraced this story, so far, and I hate to say, but are the, in terms of the blog world, are the Hillary people.
Really?
Really. And it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know, they keep rattling on about it and rattling on about it. And now the guy, you know, basically came out and he failed his lie detector test. So, I mean, if you fail a lie detector test, I'm not saying lie detector tests are impervious to fault.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason they're not allowed as proof in court, but...
True, but, you know, I mean, Bob, you know, if Agnes went missing and, you know, they gave you a lie detector test and you failed it, well, it probably... There'd be some grounds to dig in a little deeper, wouldn't there?
Well, there was some deeper digging done by the so-called professional media who found out that he was crazier than a sprayed roach, this Larry Sinclair guy, that his story didn't hold water, that he wasn't where he says he was, and neither was Obama.
Yeah.
And so you have then suddenly all the Sherlock Holmes stuff kicks in, and you have to wonder if this guy's a freelancer or if it's been... sort of helped along, if you know what I mean.
No, I certainly know what you mean.
I mean, there's freelance crazy, and then there's sort of syndicated crazy, if you will.
No doubt about it. I mean, one of the things, I mean, I guess, you know, they're going after Barack Obama, and of course they bring it up. Well, we have to know, and these are just, they're a little kooky. They're sitting here, oh, we have to know, what about Larry Craig, what about Ted Haggard, what about, you know, this and that, and what about George
Bush? Oh, by the way, Larry Craig is advertising for interns this summer.
Interns. Yeah, oh, sign me up. Let's go, Bob. Oh man! It's just an amazing, world. I mean, but that's, you know, there's the whole thing. You know, let's just say that there is a ring of truth to it, and Barack Obama is a bisexual man. You know, not that I'm real hot about Barack Obama. I certainly did vote for him in our primary, And I'll probably, you know, if he gets the nod, I'll probably wind up voting for him. The only thing that I, there's some things that I don't like about him, that about his tough guy talk on Pakistan, a couple of his so-called policies are just kind of making me get a little squeamish. But I think most of the big thing about Barack Obama is we really don't know much about him in terms of anything of what he's really done. And I think that's maybe why I feel like we have to give him a shot. I kind of almost want to go with something new and fresh, and let's see what he can do, because I really feel, and a lot of the things I said have kind of panned out, but I really do feel that, you know, that whoever's going to be president this next term is, man, they've got a mess. We have a mess to deal with that is going to be unprecedented. FDR didn't even deal with the mess that we're going to have to deal with.
That's why I opened the show, Albert, with the story about the inflation numbers for the month of January.
Yeah.
The economists were expecting 0.4% inflation, wholesale price inflation, and they got one full point instead.
Yeah.
and more than double what they were expecting. We got trouble, and that's a big old T followed by an R and an OU and a BLE. We got trouble in River City.
Yeah, big time.
And it's not going to get better anytime soon, because the Republicans have their heads buried in the sand. And for the most part, the Democrats just want to maintain the status quo. And it's politics. You know, forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. This is what it's going to be until we get past the election.
Mm-hmm.
And then the work will start. And, you know, I'll tell you, look, I am scared to death. God, I don't know. Maybe we need to just rename this show Bob Kincaid is Scared to Death. I'm scared to death of what George Bush does between November and January 20th. You know, they don't have any original ideas. They just keep bogarting off each other until and they rebrand it as something new. His daddy started a war knowing he had been thrown out of office.
Yeah.
Remember Somalia?
Yep.
And then when his daddy started the war and didn't send appropriate, adequate equipment and supplies for the soldiers there, Bill Clinton got blamed with it, among other things, in a movie called Black Hawk Down.
Yep.
And this is not the Defend Bill Clinton Hour. That's not the point of this. But that one wasn't Bill's.
Yeah, no, exactly. Oh, he still gets the blame for it.
And so, you know, it would not surprise me in the least to find long about Thanksgiving time of this year that George Bush decides it's time to kill another country.
And you know what country is on the map.
Bing, 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 bing. You know, it's Iraq, only with a different consonant, Alex.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Bob, I'm scared to death of that as well, because it's not going to be a funny day. It's not going to be...
Mention today that we are another step closer to a full military command being formed and based in Kuwait. Did I read that right, Albert?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
That gives me the turtle squirts.
It does to me as well. However, the only thing about that I can see in terms of military strategic area is it would enable, and the Pentagon's not dumb. I mean, we know this. I mean, they do dumb things and they do greedy things, and they're in the hands of the arms industry. However, everyone,
and Disney,
Newt Gingrich, sees the writing on the wall. Okay, the Republicans are done. I mean, it would take. I don't know. I don't care who the Democratic nominee is. They are going to cream the Republicans. They are going to annihilate them. I mean.
Are Republicans in general, or are you talking about McCain versus whomever?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who they can resurrect Ronald Reagan and they'd lose. I mean, Bush is in sub 20s in approval rating, and that total. I mean, granted, he's now he's at where the Democrats in the House is in terms of the Congress. I mean, we're talking like numbers that are just so abysmal, and the real thing that really just. This is the key here, and this is the meat of the issue. We're talking about the inflation numbers and this and that. And like, the pressure has been building very slowly with this economy. I see people.
This is
like
the frog in the cold water, and the cold water is getting warmer, Albert.
It is. However, I really don't, and I believe this, okay, that, well, first of all, the market is illusionary. All right, it's because it's based on emotion, how people feel about this or that or this or that or this or that. And if people don't want it to fail, it won't fail to within points. I mean, it certainly won't last, but it will. It'll fluff it up, and it'll allow it to just float a little bit longer. However, all it does is really compound the problems. Now, one of the things here is people are just starting to finally start to feel these crunches and these problems where, you know, like the housing foreclosing numbers and all this other stuff where it's like California is now in what? They're in bigger debt now with Arnold after his term than they were with Gray Davis during that time.
Yeah, that's been a tough lesson to learn for California, hasn't it?
Well, I hope they learn it. That's my big concern is I hope they actually learn it and pay attention. But this is the thing is we are in such dire financial waters at the moment. We are in big, big, big trouble. And I don't really hear, I mean, NPR, you don't hear nothing about this stuff. I don't hear anybody in mainstream news. I don't hear none of them talking about this stuff. I mean, they'll give a little headway for it, but then the next thing you know, they're talking about handless lasers or just other nonsense that just is irrelevant. I mean, we are in huge problems. I mean,
you just reminded me of something, the huge problem that I haven't mentioned and probably deserves it now. We were just talking about, you know, who was on George's radar, and, you know, you and I both defaulted to Iran, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, who else would be a convenient place to invade, say, in late November 2008, just to, you know, just to make a little bit of a mess? Wouldn't take that much in the way of troop strength, but no.
Venezuela? Korea?
How about the former Yugoslavia? You've got these crazed Serbs out there burning down embassies, throwing rocks. They attacked the consulate in godforsaken who knows where today.
Yeah.
And everything's just falling into place for George to need to. We've got to clean up the radical elements so that the Kosovars can have their freedom. Come on, can't you see it?
I see that too. Yeah. No, I can see that without a doubt. That's wag the dog time now, isn't it?
Sure. Is there any doubt?
Oh no, 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 not at all. It's just it that's so parallel to it. It's just not even funny. What are you gonna do? I mean. I think that's one of the big things that we all have to, all as progressives have to get around our, you know, liberals, that we have to get around our head is that, you know, whatever happens in terms of then and now and whatever, even if not, let's say nothing happens. I mean, there are people that are afraid and, you know, hey, I've kind of thought about it up late at night, you know, it's like, oh, what if he does do this? What if something does happen? What if another terrorist attack happens? Oh, the elections are suspended. What happens then? You know, to say that that's something that's impossible, that wouldn't happen.
No, you won't catch me saying that's impossible because I remember, I keep mentioning this because I want it to stay in the forefront of the popular, of folks' consciousness that in 2004, long about September 2004, the Bush administration floated out this notion that, well, if we're attacked again, we might have to postpone the elections in 2004. This was when it looked like John Kerry might actually mop the floorboards with George W. Bush.
Yep. Well,
and so don't think for an instant that we might not have to, you know. I mean, we're not canceling. Please, you know, I mean, we're not canceling the elections. We're just putting them off until it's safe to have them. That is not crazy talk, Albert.
No.
Because it is, I mean, or if it is crazy talk, it is crazy talk that was floated by the Bush administration on the daggum record.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's you know this stuff. If you and I are, I think we've had this conversation before. If you and I are talking about this stuff, Albert, you know that it's being talked about somewhere in the bowels of the White House. Okay?
Yep.
Because if, well, we know how these people think now, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
And if you consider, well, Congress won't give me the, Congress won't give our intelligence professionals the tools with which to do their jobs so that they can listen in, and they can go to the chat rooms where the terrorists chat in English about what they plan to do to hurt our country. And because of that, they weren't able to predict the attack that came on the Mall of America.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, no. Yeah. If I'm out of hand, you tell me.
No. You're not out of hand. I mean, you have to get really strange to get out of hand in the environment that we're in right now. I mean, the last 8 years have been another... It's been a freaking nightmare. It's been a nightmare. I mean, a nightmare upon a nightmare. Every day has been... I mean, it just gets worse and worse and worse, and his approval rating gets lower and lower. And the only thing that makes me think... It gives me hope, and at the same time, it gives me a little bit of fear. And, you know, it gives me hope that more and more people, and, you know, and I've even noticed this, that, you know, and you know me, you and I have been speaking for years, and, you know, I've never, even when he was popular, I'm a 10%er, you know, I despise this guy, you and I, both of us, you know, for years. And, you know, it used to be hard to talk to people in the supermarket or at the gas station or what have you. But now people come up to me, and that's a nice, refreshing thing. You know, as his approval rating gets lower, people get a little more brave, and they don't mind coming out and talking about, you know, the problems that we're facing. And that's a good thing, because democracy is really in the streets.
Well, yeah, the other day when I was getting my little grow-up dose from the bread guy in the grocery store, and you know, this is what I keep trying to get across to people, Albert. That's where America happens. America doesn't happen in the halls of Congress. It happens at the grocery store. It happens at the post office, and it happens at the gas station, and the convenience, the Rippy Mart, and whatever. And there's about six of us standing in the aisle, and the bread guy's standing there saying, you know, bread's going to go up to $4 a loaf by summer. And I said, you know, and he had this sort of aghast look on his face. And I said, dude, what do you expect when you put an oil man in the White House? And I looked at everybody and said, come on, raise your hands. Bush, all of you who voted for Bush, quick, come on. And a few hands went up, and I said, you did it. Why are you acting surprised?
We have 10 weeks from what I've been reading articles on. Speaking of wheat, which makes bread, we have 10 weeks of supply left in the world.
Well, I know from the story from the Asia Times or whatever that I read last week that there is already a profound shortage of rice on the international market. We know, and you know, nobody's really talking about it that much. But there was an article in the New York Times a month or so ago that had a passing reference, just, you know, sort of, oh, by the way,
mm-hmm.
that there are wheat riots in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been actually the story's been, I remember 8 months back and on BBC, not NPR, but on BBC when they preempt them at night.
I don't have any truck for Bush voters anymore.
Oh no.
And I mean I'm not trying to be mean to them, but you know, look, damn it, your vote has a consequence.
Yeah.
You voted for George Bush because you were afraid he was going to take away your hunting rifle. That Al Gore was, or that John Kerry was going to get your Bible. Well, you've got your Bible and your hunting rifle, and neither one of them are going to help you deal with $4 a loaf bread.
And you know what, Bob? And here's something. Just to speak on the gun issue and the gun seizure issue real quick. This is just something to speak on about that. It was under Bush that Katrina happened. And it was under Bush that the police and Blackwater and the Army went around to all the people in the Gulf Coast and was taking their firearms.
Yeah, that was Blackwater.
There are people that, yeah, they've got their hunting rifles back, but there are a lot of people that don't. And that wasn't under...
I never got a decent answer when I would pose the question to the Bushies back in the day. When I said, you know, you were afraid that Al Gore was going to get your guns. Are you just going to turn them over when George Bush asks for them? Well, he'd never do that. NRA said he's a good man.
Yeah, he did. He did do it.
See, the right-wing gun freaks aren't exactly upset about it because he was taking away, you know, those people's guns.
Oh, he took away their guns, too. Oh, you got to go look. It's actually NRA videos on YouTube. And I think this is funny. It's like, you know, I didn't put a comment, but I think I'm going to go do it. You know, because I saw it late last night, and I was just like, well, yeah, you know, what do you expect? You know, it's you know, Republican, Democrat, blah, 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 blah. These people are totalitarians. I mean, you know, they will take whatever they can, when they can, whenever they want. And very much,
Yeah, they're not just totalitarians, they are opportunistic totalitarians.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and who knows if they create the opportunity. I mean, I'm not saying they created Katrina, but they did, because they didn't do anything. They didn't say anything. He was on vacation or cutting brush or what was he doing? Didn't he stay at home?
Running away from the horses or something.
Yeah, he stayed on vacation for that one, didn't he? He was still on his little vacation cutting. The only time he came back and broke his vacation short was when they were going to cut Terry Schiavo's life support.
Yeah, that was the only thing. Right. Because, well, the day that the levees broke in, Lower Ninth Ward, he was at a country club in Arizona cutting a birthday cake with John McCain.
Oh, his buddy. His buddy.
He is the hardest vacationing president in the history of the United States. Yeah, these vacations are hard work. I tell you, they're hard work.
I hope history is honest about him. I really do. I really do. Because you see what they've tried to do with Reagan and even with Poppy Bush. And, I mean, if this guy gets anything less than top three worst presidents in the history of America consecutively for the next 100 or 300 years, if we last that long, if he doesn't get in the top three, then there's
something desperately wrong. Well, what do you think the purpose is of the Bush Library? And I got straightened up real quick on the horn section last night by our good friend Peter Godbold. The story came out at the end of the week, like, well, it's a done deal. The trustees have voted on it. They're going to have the Bush Library at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. That's a done deal. And everywhere you turn on the Internet these days, that's a done deal. It's over. No more. Nothing to see here. All you radical tinfoil hat-wearing paranoid Bush haters can just Bush-hating Methodists can just go home now. But it turns out it's not done. It has to be voted on by the Southwestern Methodist General Assembly or some such.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole reason... it's not just the George Bush Presidential Library. There's a thing that goes along with it. There's always, you know, where there's a Bush concern, there's always a thing. The SMU professors have banded together and said that the Bush Library will be a censored library and will cheerlead for the president. But what's more is there's a political policy thing that is part of the Bush Library, but is utterly unadministered by SMU. They have no hand in it whatsoever. And this is the organization that is going to be tasked with rehabilitating the image of George W. Bush. I said last night on the horn section that I guarantee you that once it's open, you can go through there, and when it comes to the history of the Iraq War, it'll be a narrative that says something about how George Bush was a man of peace, but because of the resolution passed by the Congress, he was compelled to go to war against Saddam. Mark my words, Albert, that will happen.
Yeah, oh yeah, it will.
Because these guys are liars. The truth ain't in them. And they will manipulate truth, they will manipulate history, they will manipulate facts, they manipulate faith, religion. They have proven themselves time and time and time again to be more than willing to manipulate anything that can be manipulated in order to make it look like George Bush was some sort of visionary.
Amen, brother. I don't know. I'd bet money on it. Yeah, no doubt about it.
You know, little Johnny with his mommy and daddy going through the Bush Library. Look, mommy, there's the picture of George Bush feeding the masses with the loaves and the fishes. Praise Jesus. Oh. It'll be there. I mean, maybe I'm a little bit over the top, but all of that stuff will be there.
No, you're dead on. You're dead on. It is going to be there. This is the whole deal. This is the other thing. This is how it's going to get there. It might not. It might fail. It might fail just because of the outrage for what's going to happen in this next decade. You know, I just want everybody to understand, you know, like, this next decade is going to be rough. It is not going to be easy. It is just going to get harder and harder and harder and harder. And I think the brutal realities of our lifestyle for the past 30 years is going to come crashing home. It's going to come crashing home like a freight train. Like you're sleeping at night and a freight train comes crashing through your house or a semi truck or something. It's going to.
Albert, you've got those beautiful little girls. And I've got kids. Agnes and I have kids here. And you look at what you just said, the next decade is going to be brutal.
Yeah.
You ever look at your kids and go, what the hell were we thinking?
Yeah, kind of, a little bit.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a bastard here. I'm what
a little bit.
There's only so much that one individual can do, and it points up the need for us all to do everything that we possibly can.
Yes,
whether all you can do is calling your senator or congressman's office every now and then, whether all you can do is writing a letter to the editor of the newspaper just to stand at it, just to make it known that there are still people who believe in this country, who believe in the potential of this country, and who believe in the potential of the people who make up this country. And that ain't the Bush family.
No,
it's the families of the future that will be had by your kids, my grandkids. Those are the people we have to believe in, and we've got to have them a country left over enough for them to have something to work with, for the love of heaven.
I believe that that's what it's going to wind up being. I believe that this next decade is going to be a real battle over the class of people that you and I fall into, and the class of people that George Bush and them fall into. And it's going to be us wanting the Constitution. And it's going to be a constitutional war. It is. I hate to say it like this, and you know, look at what's down the road for us. Peak oil. I mean, that alone.
If in fact that's down the road, if it's not back up the road as it already stands.
Bob, it's here right now.
That's what I'm saying.
It's. I mean, and you know, you could say abiotic oil or not, or biotic oil. I mean, you know, if it's abiotic, where is it? Unless, you know, they're not pumping it, but that would be a big conspiracy. And I like conspiracy, don't get me wrong. I think people do meet in rooms full of smoke and cigars, and there's one light bulb, and they sit there and they say, oh, this is what we own, this is what we're going to do.
Well, so we know they do. Cheney had a secret energy task force. What the hell do you think that was?
Exactly.
It was a conspiracy.
Yes, without a doubt. And the problem, though, with this kind of stuff is I mean, no matter which way you look at it, there's only so much gold on Earth. There's only so much nickel on Earth. There's only so much oil on Earth. And if we're pumping at maximum, right, if we're pumping at the maximum that we can produce, and we just keep seeing fields go down and down and down, and once we see these fields go down, there is no refilling. And if there is a refilling, it takes hundreds of years, if that's the truth. I don't even know. But if that's one of the things that happens, and we've only got, for example, we're already, and I know people, I've talked to them online. I know guys that work at the tar sand things in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and a lot of these guys, they're Native Americans, First Nation people. And I just say to them, I'm like, how can you do that? He's like, well, we've been raped, and now we're going to rape the earth. And that's kind of where they're at with that. You know. But then again, how do you do that? Well, they're getting $50 an hour. That's how they do it. And, you know, to sit there and take two tons, it takes 2 tons of sand to make 1 barrel of oil. Now, that's only economically feasible because the rest of the oil that's easy to get at, well,
is got.
Iraq, which it's pretty much got, except for Iraq, which is pretty much, they've sipped on it over the years, but they really haven't done the big suck on it. So that oil is now, in a sense, out of the market. And that's another reason we're seeing the cramps of this oil, you know, this peak oil issue. Which, you know, I just want people to understand, like, peak oil issue. Well, fertilizer, pesticides, plastics, everything. I mean, you look in your house, and I guarantee the large portion of it, a large portion, maybe even 50 to more percent, is made from petroleum or petroleum products or even more. I mean, it's probably even more. I happen to have a little bit less in my house just because I try to not purchase as much, but even I can't get away from it. Plastic is in everything. There's plastic on everything. And this is one of these things that they ain't going to mean none of that anymore.
Oh, Albert, you are so preaching to the choir.
I know.
No. I mean, I'm not being critical. I'm glad to hear you say things like this, because sometimes sitting here by myself, you know, waiting for a show to start or doing prep for a show or just, you know, sitting back here in the studio eating my breakfast or drinking my coffee or whatever, I think about this stuff. I wake up from sleep having had weird ass dreams. I crawled out of bed this morning thinking and I don't know where the what the dream was. I don't know where it came from. But I crawled out of bed this morning, and the first thing that went through my head was, the elements of the universe combine to form strange and marvelous things. Some elements combine to form frisbees. Some elements combine to form me. And that, you know, that was good for a couple of cups of coffee. But in the course, but you know, to be aware of, and I'm not singing my own praises. It's just, you know, it just is. Probably this is a function of the latest book I've started on, something called Warped Passages by a woman named Lisa Randall, and it's just really, really messing with my head. I'm sure I'll have more to babble about it, but it's one of those books where you read the same paragraph 8 times until you think you've got it. You know, in the course of doing all of this, I have become fairly conversant with, you know, computer stuff. Certainly not conversant the way a lot of the people who listen to this network are, but I'm pleased to have the knowledge that I have. So, you know, for instance, you know, we've got parts sitting around, and I look at the CPU fan, the cooler fan that we got for one of our computers, and it's this monstrous huge copper thing.
Yeah.
And copper is becoming more and more scarce, and this thing's solid copper. Solid copper base, copper heat pipes, copper heat sink fins, cooling fins, whatever. And I look at that in a different way now. And perhaps, you know, maybe it just means that I'm not happy on the earth and I'm just a gloomy gus. But I look at that copper and I wonder where it came from. And I wonder if this thing was manufactured somewhere in Asia. And so the copper probably came from somewhere, you know, maybe Africa or Asia or who knows. And it was dug out of the earth by somebody who was probably poorly paid. The fan is made of a hardened plastic that can stand high speeds and relatively high heat. And that's made from petroleum extractives. It's packaged in the clear plastic, again with the petroleum. And I look at that simple little fan, and I see all kinds of stuff spreading out behind it to get it from literally the bowels of the earth to me. And I can't help asking what the consequences of that are, Albert. Am I nuts? I mean, do I need a pill?
No, absolutely not. I actually, that's exactly where, you know, Bob, this is where it gets right into my favorite topic of all time, is consciousness. I mean, technology. Fred, I just want to ask you a question real quick, and you might get it wrong, a lot of people do. What is more important, your hands or consciousness?
My hands.
No. Your hands are not more important than your consciousness. Your consciousness is the reason we have hands. Your consciousness is the reason we have computers. Technology is
okay. I see that. I was thinking in terms of immediate needs. You know, without hands, it's kind of hard to eat or throttle the little deer that I need to kill to feed the family. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it certainly is, and without no doubt. But the reason we have that is because of consciousness, and the reason, and this is one of these issues, and this is what I think. We're going to get a little off into the
esoteric,
the uncharted, but. This is the esoteric, and that's where I live. But this is important. I believe this. I believe this in my heart, that we're either this is almost right, or we're going to go extinct, and that's how it's just going to pan out. Where the consciousness in the next decade is going to grow, and it's going to go to a point to where maybe a lot of these things that we already have. I mean, you think about. You're talking about all this petroleum energy and all this other, you know, raping and everything else like that that we're doing to the earth just to get you a little CPU cooler, you know, just a little thing like that. And you wonder, you think about all that for one. Think of how many they are made. Think of how many there are out there. You know, not just in this country, but in Europe.
I do that, Albert, and I can't comprehend the scale.
Cell phones, Bob. How many cell phones does this country throw away in a day? It's like 2 million.
And yet, we got our collective maiden forms in a bunch over a 500-gallon tank of hydrazine gas floating in space, so that we had to spend a few million dollars to shoot it down.
Sure, we did. I mean, you know, that's it. You know, they talk about hydrazine gas, but you know, they never even bring up the fact that, you know, if these satellites fail or if they fall back to Earth and they have plutonium on them, they don't even talk about that. I mean, for example, 1 pound of plutonium is enough plutonium to give every man, woman, and child on this planet cancer. 1 pound. And you sit there and blow it up, and it comes through the atmosphere. I mean, for example, that's one of the things that they talk about. When they failed with those satellites and so on and so forth, and the satellites with plutonium on them, and when they popped and they blew up and they contaminated the Earth and the atmosphere. That's one of the reasons we're seeing such a rise in cancer, and throughout the world. I mean, places like Canada have 1 in 2 will get cancer in their lifetime. And I think they probably sugarcoated in this country, but it's probably the same here. And it's scary, and it's something that nobody ever wants to think about, but these are things that people have to think about. And it's just, getting back into the consciousness issue. I mean, we're gonna get to this point where our political systems and our technology systems and all these other things, they're gonna come crashing into, I mean, how much longer can we maintain sweatshops? I mean, ethically, how much longer can people, like, go to the store and spend $80 on a sweatshirt that was made by some little kid in some factory? You know, this stuff breaks my heart. Because the only reason that any of you listening, and then you and me, and the only reason that we're in this geographic location is because our parents happen to have sex in this area. Seriously.
I know.
Being American.
But talk about macro to micro in 2.5 seconds.
I don't know if the
gearbox can stand that, Albert. I mean, we just ground some gears, brother. But you're right. It's all accidental.
It is. But the same deal is, they've been talking about, you know, Michelle Obama, and she hates America, and Barack won't wear the pin, he hates America. It's like, you know, that is so not an issue to me. It's so irrelevant to the actual realities.
Wait a minute. It is relevant to me.
How?
Because I'll tell you something, at least where Barack Obama, you know, wearing the robes is concerned. You know what? Okay. Barack Obama might actually give a rat's rear end what happens and what the effects are of American policy on the African continent.
Oh, well, yeah.
And as a humanist, that matters. Because I deem everybody as human.
Yes.
So, having a president who actually sees Africa as a real place, mm-hmm. and not the home of some really stupendously cool natural resources that haven't been exploited yet.
A big bush gardens.
Huge, yeah.
Real big bush gardens.
Yeah, but it's a bush gardens without the sea and bush. It's a B-U-S-H gardens. If I just keep dancing, maybe they won't eat me. I'm still not over that, overseeing that video. That was just him dancing in Africa.
Well, I mean, you know, but this is the whole, I mean, I'm just talking about the whole.
But no, you're right. On that level, it is irrelevant. It's stupidly irrelevant.
Well, I've seen Bush, Putin, and whatever the guy's name in China is, I've seen them all wearing them Chinese little polka dot outfits.
I was talking about those just the other night. Yeah, they were precious. But nobody questioned Bush's Americanness, you know, because he's white. And that's where you wind up at the end of the day, Albert, is because it's all racism, okay? It just is.
Without a doubt. And we can't sit here, and this is the deal, is we can't sit here and let... You know, hey, I'll tell you what, you know, how old is Michelle Obama? 45?
Yeah, my age, yeah.
Right, your age? Granted, all right, in the last 45 years, how much have we had to be real proud of? Or maybe we say, she said in her adult life. Okay, let's say that's exactly what she said.
My adult life starts with Ronald freaking Reagan.
Yeah, my adult life is with, Bush. I mean, not Bush, Clinton. Right when Clinton got in. That's my adult life. What have we done that I could be real proud of this country for?
I mean, I sat down at 6 years old and watched the moon landing, and that was a big deal. And I don't.
You're a kid.
You know, and that was not my adult life.
No, and this is where I'm at.
Five years later, I'm contemplating Watergate.
Yeah, Watergate, and Watergate compared to and now.
10 years after that, it's Iran-Contra.
Which was way worse than Watergate. Which was worse on orders of magnitude worse. It was so much worse than Watergate that nobody could even comprehend it. And 0.3% of the population even remembers it. Okay? That's how much worse it was.
Watergate, isn't that where Monica Lewinsky lived?
Yeah, something like that. And Watergate was nothing compared to Iran-Contra affair. Nothing. Iran-Contra affair, and that's the thing that makes me so disgusted with John Kerry, was he knows. And look at how he acted. Look at how he behaved when they swift-voted him. He knew. And he just sat there and took it. So what does that tell you?
And then on Christmas Day, sat down with the guy for Christmas dinner who called him a girly man.
His cousin. So, yeah, they're cousins.
By marriage.
They're in the same clubs. And, yeah, it's... But that's, I really do believe.
There's no family squabble that can't be cured over a glass of 1932 Chateau Lafite Rothschild.
and if your family can afford that.
Maybe a few hummingbird tongue canapes and so forth.
Yeah, well, if your family affords that stuff, how many problems do you really have?
That's why I liked what Hillary Clinton said in the last pageant. How many problems do I really have? If it all ends tomorrow, I'm still in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
I ain't you. And you know, that was probably the closest to real political honesty I've seen this political season. It was somebody from the political elite looking at the people who aren't in it and saying, at the end of the day, I'm not you, and I'm grateful for that.
Ooh. It's just nasty, isn't it? It's just straight up nasty.
Yeah.
It's nasty. And Bob, I mean, it's... I'm telling you, you'll be here, I know you will, and you and I will talk about this stuff in another 5 years, and if we can afford phones, and...
If there's still an internet.
Maybe that'll be there. This is the whole deal, though. I mean, I want to see, let's get on...
We're getting real close to the whole Zager and Evans, you know, in the year 2525 thing.
Can we just speak? Let's talk a little hope for a little bit.
Okay.
I know people are probably.
All right. I can do hope. This doesn't have to be the Gloomy Gus Radio Hour.
I know they got the razor blades, and remember, it's long ways, not across. Anyhow.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. But, shred, not hack.
Yeah. All right. What can let's say? Who do you think is going to be the nominee?
Barring smoke-filled room politics of exponential qualities, it's going to be Obama.
Okay, and I agree. And I think it's going to be Obama. Okay, now let's say Obama, and Obama, just on, you know, substance or not, no substance, he's going to tar and feather McCain. McCain couldn't even stand up to Bush. And in terms of his speaking ability is non-existent. I mean, even Ann Coulter doesn't even like McCain. So that's kind of when...
Yeah, but that may be some smoke and mirrors going on, Albert. I mean, come on.
I understand, but at the same time, she's over here... I mean, she's I don't even have words for her that I can say on the radio, but... I mean, if she's over here, she doesn't really like the guy. If she liked the guy, she wouldn't say that kind of stuff about him. You know, and my whole deal here is... Basically, Obama's going to annihilate McCain. I mean, even in the primaries. I mean, you look at the primary vote in Wisconsin. We had almost 5 million people or 4 million votes or some ridiculously high number like that. There's only 6 million people in the state.
What were the Republican numbers like, Albert?
Under 400,000.
So how many... can Republicans cross lines in your primary?
They can. That is true. They can. However, this is Wisconsin. And all Republicans... Or like our Republican, we have some real crazy right-wingers. There ain't no doubt about it. But Wisconsin, in terms of Republican and Democrat, is almost like the difference between the right-wingers in Canada and left-wingers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's Adley Stevenson Democrats versus Eisenhower Republicans.
Yes, yeah.
James Sensenbrenner notwithstanding.
Exactly. Like even our right wingers, I got a couple that aren't, but even ours, they want to carry their firearms and stuff like that. But you know, that's just what have you. But they're not that. Yeah. So, but he literally annihilated. I mean, I was even paying attention to some of these numbers via Crooks and Liars. I mean, the numbers of Democrats, and this is in the primaries, is insane. I mean, it's incredible. So I believe in the general election, just on principle. People, I mean, they're just going to get it's going to be a landslide. It's literally going to be a landslide, and I can't see how in any way, shape, or form it's not going to be. Especially with Barack Obama, you know, not for nothing, and I like words with substance, and he does say pretty words, and he says them in a tempo that even I told you a while ago kind of bothers me when he, you know, but he's actually kind of made it a little more uniform. Now he sounds like, instead of sounding like Martin Luther King just in front of black audiences, he now sounds like Martin Luther King in front of all audiences, and I'd rather see that than try to talk or real white, blah, 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 in front of the white audiences. He was kind of playing that game when he first started, and he doesn't.
Oh, I've heard him talk white guy to a white audience. I heard him do it in Charleston, West Virginia, and I got to tell you, it was duller than dishwater.
Yeah, and it's just.
I'm really glad to be here talking to you, West Virginia Democrats. Isn't Robert Byrd a wonderful man? Let's give Robert Byrd a large hand. I mean, I was there, man.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. It seems to me like he's moving away from that. So if he does that in the general election, he actually speaks with some heart and conviction. And no matter what his intentions are in terms of if he's going to fall through with them or not, I think one of the things that is most important is for us Democrats is to hold them accountable, is to actually really hold them accountable, to really, really enable, not to allow them, oh, we won, okay, let everybody go back to sleep. It's all right, we won. It's time to, you know, put their feet to the fire and really hold these people accountable. In Barack Obama, what have you? And I, you know, honestly, and I really do buy this to one too. I think if we once we elect him as president, just in the world, I think we'll gain 10 points. Just in the world, respect for us, we'll gain 10 points back. We might not gain them all. I mean, world respect for us is lower than Bush's approval rating. Okay, but we'll gain 10 points just by electing him. It'll show something. It'll show, well, maybe America's not as lost as we think they are. You know, so I think that's what
business about change and hope is about. I think.
Well, I hope so.
The very person, regardless of how effective or how good or bad he turns out to be, the very person of Barack Obama says that America is still capable of changing and growing.
Well, that's good, because we have to.
I mean, right?
We don't have a choice. Yeah, I agree, and we don't have a choice. Like, and honestly, I'd love to hear, I mean, I don't know what kind of pull you got, but they need to stop talking about corn, Bob. They have to. They really do. They have to stop talking about corn. And
well, the inflation story that I mentioned when we were talking a little bit ago, Albert, down at the bottom said that the food price jump is driven entirely by the ethanol craze.
Yes, yes, I know. This is why this is such a main issue for me. This is why I care so much about this, and this is why, like, you know, I get on a box about it, because more people need to be up on a box about it. We cannot grow. Everyone listening, please, every time you hear on the radio, what have you, you see it in the newspaper, write something. Just go do some research yourself. We cannot sustain ourselves by using corn as biomass. We cannot. It doesn't even if it was ideal. And
corn's hard. Well, you know, careful. We're going to get into some pretty hard inside baseball, Albert, but suffice to say that corn is tough on the soil. It is intensive in its current industrialized production methods.
Yes.
And by the time, and it's sort of like what we talk about with the hidden price of coal, the hidden cost of coal.
Uh-huh.
If you factor in everything it takes to produce a gallon of ethanol, you have probably, no matter, you know, because there's some kind of fuzzy, there's that phrase, fuzzy math,
uh-huh,
being used out there to say that, you know, it's, you get more energy out of the yada, yada, yada. But no, you don't. because by the time you factor it all in, there's more energy expended producing the corn that goes into the ethanol than the caloric energy that you get out on the back end.
And this is the sad thing. I mean, just not to get too technical, but straight up, if I just took it straight up, I had no idea. Oh, look, a ton of corn. Okay. Oh, look, a ton of corn biomass. I'm going to make fuel out of it. The best I would get, even, well, they have some the abiotics and all this other stuff that jumps the boost of the cellulose conversion. But that's only the best you're going to get. The best you're going to get is 1.1 or 1.2 to 1. And you,
yeah,
on average, you get 0.8. And that's not factoring in all the petroleum it took to put it there, that one ton there. I mean,
it's not factoring in the cost of producing the Roundup that goes on the Roundup ready corn, because that's a petroleum distillate.
And that's another thing that just blows my mind.
Or the jugs that the Roundup goes in.
Yes, indeed.
Or the diesel that carries the boxes of the jugs of the Roundup to the co-op where the farmer buys it, by dry. No, none of that's factored in. That's what I'm saying. The math is a little bit dummied up. It's a lot dummied up.
That's just the Roundup. I mean, and I'll tell you right now, Bob, you know, this is our most overlooked, precious, and most precious resource on the planet is soil. Healthy, alive soil.
And water, yes.
And water, well, yeah, but why? We got a lot of water. And maybe they were talking, the only way we don't have a lot of water is when we privatize it. That's when we don't have a lot of water.
When we take the places where it's still nice and clean and fresh and turn it into a poison pit.
Well, yeah, that as well. I know you got me there. However, we're sitting here with, they keep, like all the people, this is the thing that just blows my mind, is all the people that really hate Monsanto, and they hate these agri companies, okay, that are just making these Franken foods, okay, and these Franken corns and all this other stuff. These are the very people who are sitting here talking about corn for ethanol, and they don't make the simple connection of, well, who's making these seeds for number two field grade corn? It's Monsanto. It's all these other corporations that you can't trust because they're trying to patent these plants when nobody should be patenting plants. Nobody should be making farmers buy seeds every year. If farmers need to buy seeds...
Yeah, the Iraqis don't need something in their national legislation saying that they will plant... because, after all, this is the neck of the woods that domesticated wheat 8,000 years ago.
Yes.
I know. Exactly. I know. It really gets to that derp, derp, derp point, and
yeah,
because it's so self-evident, it's so patently obvious that the only person who can't see it is somebody who thinks they're going to get an extra 2.7 cents on the quarterly stock dividend out of it.
And that's exactly who should not be in charge of it. That's exactly who should not be in charge of it. I mean, people like that, almost in a sense, like that one, what's that goober's name? He's a real goofy looking guy, and he's the one who lit the cigarette up on CNBC or one of those things, and he's the guy who talked about how Canada has one chemotherapy machine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Him. He's on the dead brain cell.
Korea. Yeah, we need it for the economy to attack North Korea. He wants, people like him. You know what? All right, make your money, shut up. All right, just make your money and shut up. They always talk about the Hollywood elite, and they make your movies and shut up. Well, these people that, these hedge fund scum, okay, make your money and shut up. Because what they're doing anyway is so, maybe it's not, they can buy the laws. But in my mind, it's so ethically depraved that they're illegal. It's almost like a natural law. You just don't do certain things. You know what I'm saying? A natural law thing.
Yeah, it brings out something, an emotion in me that I first saw really given life to the last time I was at a Democratic convention, which was 1988 in Atlanta, and there was this lady with a hat on walking around outside the Omni selling buttons that all said what she was yelling, "Die, yuppie scum! Die, yuppie scum! Die, yuppie scum! Die, yuppie scum!" And I mean, they were selling like hotcakes. Everybody at CNN was wearing a button that said "Die Yuppie Scum" by the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's exactly who we don't need.
Die corporate scum. Die corporate scum.
Yeah, die corporate scum. Because these are the people that are telling us that we need to grow corn. These are the people that are going to literally Like, they don't care, Bob. This is one of the things. They don't care if oil is $200 a barrel because they can afford to fill their car. Okay? They don't care that people in Africa and Asia and what have you are going to have no wheat. And they don't care if a pound of pasta turns to $10. They don't care because they can afford it. When you have $400 million plus, you have $400 million plus. That's so much money. I mean, that's more money than you
have. I know. I saw an article the other day. This kind of ties in a tangential sort of way, Albert. I saw an article the other day that said sales of super luxury yachts are booming.
Yeah, they are.
And I saw this, and granted, I've got some little corner of me that goes, ooh, you know, like,
oh, sure.
You know, like Homer with donuts. Mm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I saw a photograph of the super luxury yacht Maltese Falcon.
My brother-in-law builds them.
Holy cow! This thing was an honest to God clipper ship.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, I know. My brother, what's the name of it?
They're back ordered, Albert. They're back ordered.
Bob, wait, hang on. My brother-in-law builds them, and he's an evangelical George Bush voter, but evangelical Christian the most thing. And I remember when I saw, he just got this job working for them. He used to work for Skipperliner. Now he works for these other people, and they're a Menominee, and they make those boats. That's what they make. I mean, the gas that they have, 4,000, the one that you're talking about only has a 4,000 gallon, like, fuel tank.
Right.
So you couldn't even afford, again, like, you and I couldn't afford to fill the gas tank on one of these ships. The people that buy these ships, Bob, they'll buy the ship, and he was telling me stories about it, and I did say one comment to him, which I'll reflect with you in a second, but the people that buy these ships, they go in and they go, I want to make changes, instead of the Peruvian walnut flake, I want this and that, and I would like the inlay. And by the time they're done with the little, like, just like, you know, if you order a burger or whatever, you go, can I get cheese with that? Or, can I, you know, put no pickle on that?
I want the African baby bone armrests.
Yes, exactly. When they're done with their changes, they're like, another $8 million. Like, they make $8 million, just everyone. Listen.
You know what amazes me, though? A guy will buy one of these things, and he doesn't even want to sail it. He wants to ride on it.
Yeah, well, people, they can afford it. That's the whole deal.
No, but, I mean, if you owned one of those, wouldn't you want to drive it, for the love of God?
Yeah, you know it. If I win the Powerball, baby, that's what I'm going to be like.
Yeah, I'm all over that.
Yeah, a pen.
And I'm driving.
Well, the computers do it for them. Man, you got to see, like, they have security.
Yar, haul out the mizzenmast, matey. You know, I want to do all that stuff. I want the pirate costume. That's why I want the daggum boat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hoist the Jolly Roger, hi.
Yeah. Now, you know, this is what I said to my brother-in-law, because they are, as I said, evangelical to the extreme. And he makes these boats and so on and so forth. And I said to him, I'm like, what's that saying about a camel fitting through the eye of a needle? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that played.
They just basically was like, that's right. I kid
about the pirates, but the fact of the matter is, these are pirate ships, Albert.
Oh, they are. Oh, yeah, they are. You know, the only people that have money like that, that got it on an honest basis, are people that went to lotto. How about this guy in India that's building a billion-dollar house. A billion in India. A billion dollars.
That should cover a chunk of the subcontinent.
Billion, Bob. It's 27 stories tall. And he's a house. It's just a house. He doesn't even have a large Indian family. A billion-dollar house. You know,
but at least there's a tradition for that sort of thing there. I mean, after all, you get the Taj Mahal. And you know what they did with the guy who built the Taj Mahal, right?
They
lopped his head off as soon as he was done with it. Because everybody who'd worked on it said, wait a minute, what? It's a mausoleum? You're not even going to live in it? Boop, there went his head.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the world we're at, you know, and as I say, I was just going to say, I hate to sound like a communist, but there should be a cap on how much money someone can have. because we see what they do with it. Okay, they either.
Well, wait. I don't know that I'm going to jump in and buy on that because I still want the boat. Okay, but I want the boat. I want the boat to do good things. I guess this is a marginal definition of good things. I want to put all my friends on the boat and have a huge party.
Me too, but Bob, Gandalf would have wanted to do great things with the ring. He would have wanted to do.
Oh, that's just not fair.
It is. Well, No.
Bringing Gandalf into this is not fair. That's epistemological cheating, Albert. Doggone it.
But I'm just serious here. I mean, I do too, but you know what, Bob? I'd say the cap isn't like a million. 400 million, 500 million. You make $500 million, or you're worth $500 million, that's it. You're done. You cannot work anymore. You cannot sit here and do anything like that anymore. Okay? You can't just sit here and start controlling things anymore. Because what happens is the power and the resources. We're talking about copper, okay? You're talking about copper. Who do you think owned that copper? You think let's say it was mined in China. Do you think the people of China owned that copper? No, the people who bought the mine or bought the rights to the copper owned the copper.
See, this is what's disturbing out of the story a couple of weeks ago that I really didn't touch about Bill Clinton's foundation going over to Urfistan, Uzbek, Tajik, Kurmeni, you know, whatever, Istan. And I'm sorry, that's very, very shallow on my part. I just don't happen to remember the name of the country.
There are too many of them anyway.
But he goes over there on a mission of, you know, real mercy to find good things to do with his foundation's money. And a guy who has promised umpty bajillion dollars to his foundation says, hey, Bill, can I tag along? And Bill says, well, I don't know if you'd want to. We're just going to meet with that Istan president, and he ain't a really interesting guy, but if you want to, it's your nickel. So the guy rides along, and Bill says, President Mersnekenackety, this here's Joe Bob Wellishnot. He wanted to come along here with the foundation. Pleased to meet you. Can I have your uranium rights?
Ooh.
Any friend of Bill Clinton's is friend of mine. Rights are yours.
Yeah?
And that made my gut go a little floppity-flop, Albert.
Yeah, that's not right. That's ethically disgusting. That's horrible.
And then it hit the news, and Bill said, well, I didn't do no special favors for him. And technically, he didn't. He just let him come along. And that country just happened to be chock-a-block in untapped uranium resources.
Yeah, he didn't do anything special. He just said, this is my friend. But, you know, I mean, that's how...
This is my $5.5 billion friend.
Yeah. This is... And that's just... I mean... This is what I mean. Like, what is it? The world. The world. It's 0.1. What is it? Like 0.1% of the world. Or even the 1% of the world. They own 80% of the world's resources. 80% of the world's wealth. That is so unjust. It is so unbalanced. How does anyone wonder that we're having these problems? You can't have... I mean, we abolish kings by foot. These kings are just creating themselves. That's how the kings back in the day became kings. Is they took their, they went on quests or
they were the toughest, richest people on the block that couldn't get killed.
And how'd they get their money? They went, invaded other people, and stole it.
And took their stuff.
And then they became kings or dukes and this, and then they became kings of everything.
I'm a marquis.
And all that jazz. But I'll tell you one thing that I just watched an interesting.
And the rest of us are left standing around being varlets.
Oh yeah. Well, we're landless peasants. How do you like that? That's what we are. All of us. We're landless peasants. And I'll tell you, you know, and I hate to sound too.
Albert, we're oafs.
Well, yeah. With me dripping down our beards.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean,
are we having some oxen knuckles tonight for dinner, Mother? Yes, and be glad you're having them. Albert. No, you're right. You're right. God, we've done another one of those conversations, Albert.
Yeah, we did. I love it.
I'll tell you what, they're good for me.
All right, well, I'll try.
I hope you like these wanders as much as I do. But I still want the damn boat, and if I win the lottery, I'm getting it. But we're having a huge... But if we do, I'm having a huge party. I mean, huge. It'll start in one port and end in another.
I'm going to make a...
And everybody gets to drive for a little bit.
Well, there's a lot of... Yeah, awesome. There we go. That's nice. There's a lot of old, really giant resort hotels in this Isla Margarita down in off Venezuela. It's right outside the hurricane belt. And if anything like that... If I win, you could buy one of these, like, 800-bedroom hotels on the beach for, like, $2 million. So I'll buy one of those. And
you get the hotel, I get the boat, and we'll ferry Pete back. And it will be a party of all of...
Yeah, yeah. You take the boat, and we'll grab people back and forth. Man, that'll be a good time.
I think so. Hey, Albert, take care, brother.
You too, brother.
Thanks for the call.
And I'll call you later.
Stay warm.
Stay sane.
Yeah.
Right,
I think I've got the harder job. Later.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's negative 20 here.
Ouch!
Yeah, it's rough.
Jesus, what do you live up by? Point Barrow, Wisconsin?
Oh, no. I live in the South, and it's cold. It's like space out here. I'm standing outside my backyard right now, and I've got snow up to my belly. Actually, it's past my belly.
I got to experience that someday. I just got to.
Come on.
Once. Talk to you later, Albert.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Bye now. You tell me another radio network that it would allow a conversation like that to take place. And I don't just mean Albert. I mean all of you guys. Is this reason enough to keep the horn on the air? I mean, I'm just asking. Is it reason enough to keep the horn on the air? Yeah, 26th day of February, we ain't to $2,000 yet. Just thought I'd mention that. We'll come back with more phone calls after a little bit of a break. It's time for a refill here. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the only place that conversation radio happens on the whole bloomin' internet. What this is the horn. Who I am is Bob. And I'll be back. Well, that just had to happen. Got to thinking about that I'll be okay comment. It was a nice comment to be made. But at the end of the day, that was kind of, you know, look, all these congressmen, all these senators, presidents, ambassadors, yada, yada, yada. At the end of the day, they go home chuckling because they realize that they ain't us. And they don't have to be us. And they don't have to give a rotten rat's rear end about whether bread goes to $4 a loaf now, do they? No, no. Not hardly, they don't. All right, let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Oh, I did it again.
Really?
Yep, the same feedback. That must be a Lisa Randall warping passages of time moment.
Yeah, that it really.
I know who you're talking about because
she's cool.
Yeah, she is. I listened to her on Coast to Coast. And she was on there for like, because ever since Nori's taken over, I know a lot of people say, well, we don't do great programs like that. Well, Nori always has on some cool physicists on every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks or so.
One of the things I like about her is she does not suffer fools with any sort of grace whatsoever.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued in that stuff, and I read like, you know, I like another person I like is Michio Kaku. He has like a series of books out. One was called Hyperspace, and he's up there with the same level. And he also I listen to his radio show, but I'm not really a fan of that.
David, do you ever buy those Jelly Belly jelly beans?
Yeah.
You know how you can take the grape one and the peanut butter one, and you get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich jelly bean when you put them together? Or like a coconut one and a marshmallow one, and you get a toasted coconut marshmallow jelly bean. Well, it's the same thing because part of the reason that I'm loving the Lisa Randall book so much is I was reading it at the same time that I had some Kurt Vonnegut books going.
Oh.
And
yeah.
And I think maybe 200 years down the road, Kurt Vonnegut's going to be recognized as the greatest theoretical physicist of all time. Because all of the stuff that these modern theoretical physicists are talking about are things that somewhere along the way got mentioned, sometimes in passing and sometimes as a major theme, in a Kurt Vonnegut book. The whole idea that she takes off on with regard to extra dimensions was brought out in Vonnegut books four decades ago.
Mm.
Now, what scares the life out of me is that I think he knew it too. Have you read Cat's Cradle?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, there is a substance that gets invented there called Ice 9.
Oh yeah, I know that from Surfing with the Alien, Joe Satriani.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, there's probably a lab out there where some scientist is working on Ice 9.
Probably there is. Kryptonite exists.
Yeah, look, it's all stuff that's a matter of the scope of dreaming. You know, Tralfamadorians who live outside of time and are able to see time as a fourth dimension like we see width, height, and depth.
You know...
And lo and behold, the theoretical physicists are talking about exactly that.
I always say imagination is the engine of dreams becoming reality. And I get a lot of... You get a lot of criticism for it because a lot of people think, well, that can't happen and that can't happen. But, you know, the real truth is, and I hope people are listening to this, the real truth is the most amazing things are happened by the smallest group of people. It always starts with that. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, you might not know. You sparked this, and you may never know it, maybe anonymously, but there are those moments right now that are happening, and it's the fact that you just have to just see yourself in the, like for example, I watched What Would Jesus Buy today.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll be sending that your way.
I've read about that.
Yeah, and the great thing about it is, here's a guy who was a caterer, and like you, Bob, he decided that there is a position in the world where he can do something that will affect change. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, you're not, they say, well, you just listening to a radio show, that's not really affecting change. Well, that's untrue, because change will start from the inside. It will start mentally. And it's like growth. It's like growing a garden. It's like growing trees. And see, that's why people shouldn't say, we should never, in the progressive and liberal movement, they should never have the word entertainment. We should always be about edutainment. And I stole that off of KRS-One. But he was always about edutainment.
But I feel so pretentious if I say that there's anything educational about this program, because I'm the last guy in the world that's to be educating anybody.
Well, the thing you have to keep in mind, Bob, is when you're listening to when a person is listening to a program, see, this is something with the same thing of the things that I don't like. They inspire greatness as well. But the thing is, with a program like this, when someone's listening to something, it's making their mind think. And then they ask someone and something, and that starts a chain reaction of something. It's sight unseen now. It's a force working through the entire. Now people say, well, I want to see the change. Well, guess what? Most likely, the more and more you want to see the change, the less.
Most likely you are to yeah.
Yeah, the less and less you're going to see it. It's a filter on you, see? Now, when someone says, well, nothing's going to happen. Well, nothing is going to happen that you can see, but what is happening before our very eyes every single day, thanks to the internet and thanks to continuing the dialogue, like we're playing a tennis match or something, it's this kinetic energy that's bouncing back and forth that is continuing to. And if you really want to really want to get metaphysical and really want to get into that other level, it's almost like that this is a giant brain and we're lighting up neurons.
You're getting so close to where I am.
Yeah.
And
that's really what, and you know, that's, I mean, a lot of people, and again, I'm not even knocking the people who say nothing will change.
I personally think the universe is a self-actualized consciousness.
You know what? It most likely is.
And if there is one self-actualized consciousness, and its name, for lack of anything better to call it, is the universe, then that probably means there's an entire community of universes, which is a community of consciousness on another scale upward. And this is why I lose my mind with the people who say, "Well, you believe in the Big Bang? Who put all the matter together that banged?"
Yeah.
Well, okay, okay, that was God. Now, who put God together? Well, nobody put God together. Well, you just said nothing can come from nothing. Well, God is. Oh, ouch.
Well, you know, a lot of the people who have this, you know, the funny thing about it, which I believe, is a lot of people who have this conflict is probably subconsciously, they're thinking the same exact things. Because that's,
I mean, I'm at a point where I believe that human beings,
yeah,
are probably, and I don't know if we can come down to the smallness of scales, but on a physics level, we are probably quarks. You know, we are less than an electron, less than a proton, less than a neutron. We're a quark. We are one little tiny. We're the. Oh, what is it that's on the that makes up the letters of. The amino acids, A, G, whatever. You know, we're the letter. One human being is the letter T, the making up a gene that sits on a string that makes up that's on a chromosome that makes up the yada yada. That's how far down we are.
Yeah.
And you know, blood cells can't dream of eyeballs. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know how people are always, and I direct this to a lot of people who are always talking about, because this is another thing that I think I'm separate from a lot of people who are really worried and nervous, and I guess they're looking for this big moment, like, you know, like you watch a George Lucas movie and they got the THX on you, like. Oh, yeah, here we go. I just heard it.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, the probably one of the oldest examples of that is the artificial hands that are used in laboratories that have to be like totally clean rooms, vacuum rooms, whatever.
Right.
Those things are called Waldos. Those things are called Waldos because Robert A. Heinlein invented Waldos in a book that he wrote in the 1930s. For artificial hands, for a kid named or a person named Waldo. And so when they got invented, they became Waldos. That's like the trailer for the new Star Trek movie. Oh, we Star Trek reference. I knew we'd finally get one in this conversation.
You know what Ridley Scott was told when he went to Japan by famous architects? He said, if it wasn't for Blade Runner, Tokyo wouldn't look like this. And he was just stunned. But then he thought about it.
And it does.
I know.
And
that's art.
No Blade Runner, no Jumbotron.
That's art imitating reality. Back to
It's art pushing the definitions of reality, David.
Yeah, art pushing the definitions of reality, making it become reality.
So when Kurt Vonnegut dreams up a race of people who live outside of time and see time as another spatial dimension, then the physicists start thinking about, wait a minute. You know.
Well, you know, I always thought that the reason why, and this is getting a little bit into the realm of crazy, but the reason why Lord of the Rings was so real, how he came up with the language and he stayed in his basement and it was a metaphor for the times he was living in, and it was all of that too, but the reason why it was so real is because he made it real.
Sure.
And I think here's the thing that'll make even they're saying they're finding the archaeologists are finding hobbit people now, right?
Right. What is that? Indonesia or somewhere? Yeah, little tiny humans.
So maybe we're not ready for the dragons and we're not ready for the ogres, and we're not ready for that, and it just seeps through little by little, all of little residue, imagination residue.
What happens when the theoretical physicists start getting really serious about the Australian Aboriginals and the Dreamtime? You know, we talked about the Dreamtime with John, I think, on the Horn section a while back. I love that concept, David, because it says basically that your waking life is not reality, that what goes on in your sleep and in your dreams is the real reality.
Did I ever send you that? You got to watch that with Richard Linklater, that movie, Waking Life. Oh my God, that's exactly that. And but
Agnes, Agnes got up from a nap the other day and she said, I had the weirdest dream. I was a nurse who was a state trooper, and I said, being a state trooper is about as far from Agnes as Agnes can possibly get on any sort of, polar continuum.
Right.
And I just looked at her and said, well, that just means that there's some, you just rubbed up against some universe where you are. And why the hell can't that be the answer? I don't think she had that dream because, of some Freudian thingamajig, where she, hated her mother or all that psychoanalytical stuff.
But another thing, Bob, is a thing that I notice when you go into physics forums, and I see it a lot. They encourage imagination to a point, but then if you say anything outside the realm of those lines, you're almost treated like a blasphemer. You're treated. Not so much as with the scarlet letter on you, but it gets to the point of, well, that can't happen, and that's not how it happens, because this textbook says this and this says this. And to me, this is the struggle that I have, because I appreciate science and I appreciate imagination and the unknown and fantasy and all of that, but when it comes down to it, I'm like, anyone who gets louder and louder with a megaphone, to me it just looks even more suspect when it comes to science. And it's like, you, even though you say this is scientific fact, I mean, it almost seems like now you're just becoming a you're believing what you're just going to that other level of belief that there's no realm for possibility of what anyone else says.
And but the really good ones that will not dismiss out of hand any idea. Although, you know, at the beginning of Lisa Randall's book, she says, "I'm not talking about the Star Trek stuff."
I know. You know, that's the one thing. That's the one thing that I don't. This is another thing that I think is keeping a lot of physics from moving in that direction of where I would like to see it go, to the Jetsons area and stuff like that. You know what? It takes somebody to be in there and start talking and say, so what? It didn't work the first time. It didn't work the second time.
Well, like, look at, you know, I mean, if between the two theories of travel as manifested, say, in Star Trek versus Dune.
Right.
Oh, God, we have gone big time inside baseball, David. We are geeking so bad right now.
That's another thing. I don't like the fact that people need to take back the word geek as well.
Oh, no. I use it in a good form. I mean
it in a good way. But
from a physical standpoint, I think it's more likely that we wind up doing something, you know, and we're talking 1,000 years down if we haven't killed ourselves by then.
Yeah.
Something more similar to the folding of space that Frank Herbert manifested in Dune than the sort of instant, you know, sort of cork out of the champagne bottle, you know, warp factor 9 Captain thing from Star Trek.
Oh.
Because space is fluid, space is bendable. You know, we know that it's curved. Boy, am I out of my league! I mean, if there was a real physicist listening to me right now, I'd get my ass whipped. But
what I believe is what a lot of people may not believe this, but what I believe is everything has a basis for something that you can learn from, and that is. You may not believe it, but it's another piece of the puzzle that we should all put into place, which is something like the reason why I'm so interested in a lot of mystical type of stuff. And like, for example, one of my favorite musicians is Victor Wooten of the Flecktones.
Oh.
The reason why I like him so much is I don't think a lot of people know this, but he's like a one of the top levels of a kung fu expert. He studied with his brothers, and it was the most painstaking Jet Wu or something like that.
Yeah.
Jet Wu Kushan or some kind of martial arts like that. And what he said was he said something remarkable. He said, "We need to stop looking at music as just notes and sound. We're really conduits of energy, and we're here to bring that spiritual energy into music." And he goes,
"Yeah, see, I'm not enough of an elitist, David, that I think that when you go down into the Peruvian jungles and you drink the what's-its-its stuff and you go on the spirit journey, I don't know that you're not going on a spirit journey.
You haven't seen Southland Tales yet. That's the next thing. That's the thing after you watch Daniel Plainview, There Will Be Blood. After you watch that, you got to watch Southland Tales. Southland Tales is just I have to have a conversation with you and John about that. That is one of the films, to me, that is one of the films of our time, because it reacted such a negative and like cans just booed mercilessly at this film. But this was Richard Kelly's idea. I don't know if you've seen Donnie Darko yet. Also, but
yeah.
Oh, you saw Donnie Darko?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is his second film. And
oh, by the way, it's ayahuasca. The stuff you drink in the Peruvian jungle. Ayahuasca.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hey, David, I got to roll on. I got a couple of calls stacked up. Well, I got more than a couple of calls stacked up, truth be told.
All right, moving on.
But, my God, what an hour this turned out to be.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, David.
All right, later.
Later. You know, I used to call David our pop culture correspondent, but I don't think that's entirely fair. Before I do go to the phones, let's hit the mailbox real quick, because I had a couple of fun ones. William writes in and says, Bob, I think about the same kind of things all the time. I worked for one of the big three auto dealers in the service department. As you know, most everything is made of some form of plastic and made overseas. I look around here And now even the little I have left, my woodworking tools are mostly plastic. We were told this was for safety. It's really a selling point, not a safety issue, and these were not cheap tools. I've always had a bug about progress. Even though we have things we did not have before, when I look at how all this panned out through the years, what have we gained compared to what we've lost? H.L. Mencken wrote an article many years ago called The Libido of the Ugly, which focuses on the mentality of America and progress. Alan Watts added to this in a live speech. He read Mencken's article and then added his own bit about the food we've got and the freeways leading to nowhere from Northern California. It's all about progress and the damage it brings. And, of course, that raises an open question as to what constitutes progress. Our friend Robert in Japan says, just a comment on resources and waste. Japan consumes 30% of all fish, and there's less and less fish each year. China's now consuming more fish, and so the decline will be far worse than before, which means fish prices, even in the States, will rise, even for those fish raised in fish farms, because the fish farmers will all try to profit from the situation. As for computer CPUs, there was a study on how much water was needed to make one computer. It was found that for making all the parts and for making the plastic casing, thousands of gallons were needed. Let's talk about food waste. Japan could exist on the food that the United States wastes. As for all the lunchboxes, bentos, and fast food that is thrown away due to expiration dates in Japan, that food could probably feed a few African countries. Maybe a collapse in this system might be a good thing, because one has to ask, how long should this go on, and why should it go on? And finally, with regard to my remarks about National Public Radio, Bob, this is from our pal Cindy. Yeah, Bob, forget about NPR. They went Republican 7 years ago when Bush came to town. It was the first thing they went over to destroy, PBS and NPR. Gone. They turned PBS and NPR into commercial stations. She says, there is another choice. Pacifica is still standing. If you're somewhere that there's Pacifica. Sure. Let's see. And, God, again, all I can say is, This kind of conversation, this kind of radio, can't happen in right-wing-owned, corporatized terrestrial media. It just can't. Oh, and a reminder, Mark Levine and I, since Guy James has been on vacation for a couple of weeks, Mark Levine and I and anybody else who cares to join in are going to have a run at filling in for Guy tomorrow afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Hope you'll join us. I think it'll be fun. And if that works out, we'll maybe have another run at it on Thursday. How would that be? And let's see if I can get to a couple of these phone calls along the way, if you haven't given up on me. Okay, hold on a minute. Hi, who I got?
Hello?
Hello?
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Okay. Hi, it's John in Chicago. I just discovered your station.
Oh, wonderful, John. I'm so glad you called.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad I discovered it. I was immediately drawn in. And I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I mean, you cover a lot of ground. Really interesting subjects, but it's guys like David, you know, I think you were saying that, physicists, if there was a physicist, you know, he would tear you a new one for all this speculation.
Yeah.
But, they love guys like David, and I love guys like David, you know, that, are always thinking. And, you know, they're just, their imagination, it's that kind of imagination that, I think really drives so much of, science and culture. And I just wanted to point that out. I've had some modern physics, and I was a math major, and I got I'm a biostatistician.
Oh, I admire you so very much, John. And I don't say that that's not a hollow compliment. I somewhere along the way I dropped off the mathematical roadmap, and I've regretted it ever since.
It gets harder and harder. And I. They kicked me when I did a couple of years of grad school in mathematics, and I looked around, and finally they just kicked me off their planet. They couldn't, you know, I couldn't take anymore. It just gets, you know, harder and harder and harder. But just more abstract.
Well, and there are always stories about, I mean, you know, the movie A Beautiful Mind comes to mind, you know.
Yeah, right.
Granted, the guy's an economist, but there was an element to it that it's like, it's, you know, in a way, there are places that the human brain tries to go that eventually the human brain, it's not so much, the subject matter rejects the mind of the human. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, I think, I mean, you look, and when I say I look around and, you know, what you see, you know, especially in the professors and some of the, you know, really bright graduate students, their entire brain is focused on mathematics, you know, and they're basically just bouncing off of desks and bumping into walls. And I mean, the absent-minded professor, it's very, very real in a math department.
That's why I find somebody like Lisa Randall kind of engaging, because all of her chapters are headed with rock and roll lyrics that I get
that I get the sense
that she probably picked out.
Uh huh.
So that means that she's, you know, able to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah. No, it's very important. And people that can explain these things, you know, to the general public are great, you know, and really valuable. Very few can.
And well, there's value beyond that, though, John, because, and I don't mean to sound like some sort of an infomercial for, you know, Feed the Children or something. Not that that's a bad thing. I'm just scared to death of people thinking I look like Sally Struthers. No, but if you can light that fire under a kid, because I've got, you know, we've got four kids here, grandbaby. And they are all, most of them are at that age where they're fascinated with this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you've got to be able to make that stuff real to them. I think part of the reason I bear a lot of blame in this, but part of the reason I fell off the mathematical and science wagon was because I was confronted with teachers who bored me to pieces.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Algebra is mighty dry work. And trig gets even drier, frankly, unless you got somebody there who can turn it into a reality. John, I'm sorry I got to you so late. We're on top of the end of the program, but I hope you'll call back.
Yeah, I just want to say one quick thing about the.
Sure.
You were talking about the about God, the existence of God, and one thing I just want to point out, just sort of a little thing that occurred to me. You know, how could any being know that it knows everything? You know, it just seems like a game stopper. How could anything, any being, ever, you know, in existence, you know, as we know it or elsewhere?
Yeah, perfect certainty.
Yeah, how would they ever know that they know everything?
And nine times out of ten, when you run across somebody who is pleading that perfect certainty, that's the first sure sign that you're dealing with either a charlatan or a madman.
Yeah, right. And so many people are being misled and just...
Well, you know, like I said, we got to get out of here, but I hope we'll hear back from you. Join us in the chat room, email, whatever, and by all means, tell your friends.
Okay. All right, Bob. Enjoyed it. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Take care and stay warm.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Wow, what a show this turned out to be. This is one of those that ends with me feeling like I've just had an ice-cold shot of Aquavit or something. But we got to get out of here because on his way... with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program is, of course, Peter Godbold with Strictly Confidential. So let me just say thank you to all the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, who are working hard to be part of the solution, and invite you to join them in the same. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 118 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively
on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch over at CRMW.net. And we are happy to have their support. It's a fine organization. That's CRMW.net. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, February 26th of 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m., approximately 9.02 p.m. Eastern Time, you are listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and participate. We'll talk about what's on your mind and what's coming up on the show. I'll give you the phone numbers in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak. Some of the world's smartest people are in that chat room, and the find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the Head On Radio Network main site, and you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a very small part. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to our MySpace page, more information about the show, and links to help you locate music that you hear on the show. The toll-free lines are 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. We are listener-supported. That would be area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. And it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the email during the breaks, and you can communicate with me that way, or by telephone, or by joining us in chat.